All right, who's ready for the Dirt Life Show?
Welcome, welcome, welcome to episode 114 of the Dirt Life Show. We are at PRP Seats today. We're going to talk a whole bunch of stuff about safety. We don't want to talk about catching on fire, but we are going to talk about it tonight. So we have David Nerbus. From Race Safely, who handles all of the race organization safety stuff for all of us off-road guys, takes care of all of us. We got over to my far left, we got Aaron Wedeking of PRP Seats, a.k.a. Desert Dad.
Yep.
And we're going to talk all kinds of cool stuff. We got John Lewis from Desert Squadron. He's actually in the house as well. So after the commercial break, Aaron's going to hit his 75 hard, go on a walk, and then John's going to come on and talk with us about some other safety stuff as well. We're going to have a really cool call-in guest with Blake Wilkie. He's going to talk about some of the stuff that he uses, not just from PRP, but in his builds altogether, and just talk about what he does for safety. He just built that trophy bug. He does his Class 11 stuff, so he's really got a lot of safety stuff going on in his program. And we're going to talk with Justin Smith from Shock Therapy a little bit about safety, too. Justin just had an incident with an animal, a big cow, against a UTV the other day. He's going to share some stuff about safety as well. I know he uses some of your guys' products as well, too.
He does, yeah.
So it'll be cool to talk with him about that stuff. So we want all you guys to comment in and let us know what kind of questions you have. A lot of the stuff that us three up here are going to talk about will probably be race-related things because that's the stuff that we do on a daily basis, right? But all of this stuff goes across the board. It can be enthusiast stuff. It can be for your kids. It can be all kinds of different stuff. So please comment in. We already had a bunch of questions coming through on social media and to our direct messages and stuff. So please make sure that you guys tell us what you think is good about the safety that you guys do, or if you have questions about what you can do to keep your family or your friends or your kids safer as well, because these guys are the experts. They'll tell you exactly how it is and get you guys on the right track. I'm Georgie Hamill, and man, it's going to be a really, really fun show. We might even talk a little bit more about some of the stuff that David has been through with some incidents on course, rescuing vehicles on course. I don't know how far we want to get into it, but we can talk about how you helped me personally in 2019 with my accident in a UTV. Like I said, Blake Wilkie's going to call in. Justin Smith's probably going to have some funny stuff to say. Aaron actually had an incident this past year as well, a safety incident. He wasn't actually in a vehicle, but he was pitting. So we're going to talk a little bit about pit safety as well. Fire, what to do on all of those different things. So we'll give you guys some product stuff, some overall tips, just all that good stuff. And when John comes on, we're also going to talk about something that you guys can all carry in your vehicles. Doesn't even have to be a race vehicle, but like medical kits that you guys can carry to help people. These are even good to have when you're traveling across country or going on road trips and stuff, because you never know when something like this is going to happen, not only just to you, but to people around you. So it's always good. And I just want to give a shout out because next week we're going to talk with our buddy Seth Quintero and AJ Jones, Austin Jones, about the Dakar stuff. So stay tuned for that one. That one's going to be a good one. Let's give a shout out to the guys at PRP for letting us stay here and have a little bit of fun. We had some tacos. Aaron didn't partake in that. So Valinda, you're good. He didn't cheat on his diet. We already had a comment come in and said, good on you for sticking the 75 hard.
Nice.
So shout out to the guys at PRP for letting us stay here. Justin actually hooked us up and got us all this little studio going in their showroom. So it's pretty cool that we get to be here and, hanging out with everybody. And thank you very much, Dave, for driving down too.
Absolutely.
You guys can always check us out. Unfortunately, not tonight, because we got IT issues, not on Facebook and YouTube tonight, but it'll be up there tomorrow. You guys can always listen to us on iTunes and Spotify, all of the other networks. We have that stuff available. We call it the archives. But please, I never ask anybody for anything, but I do want you guys to start sharing this thing. I think in 2022, I'm going to start saying, what does Andy Frisella say? You got to pay the fee. You got to share the show with everybody, right? Yep. So I would like everybody to share the show, get your friends on it, and help us grow the show so we can be even bigger and better and keep this thing going for you guys for the future years to come. But thank you guys very much for joining us on Instagram Live. We're going to get interactive with you guys as much as possible. So please comment in, tell Aaron how proud you are of him doing 75 hard. You guys can always check us out on social media at The Dirt Life Show and slide into our DMs. You guys have been doing that a ton this year, so thank you very much. Go to the website as well, thedirtlifeshow.com. We have a sponsor deals page that can pay you guys back a lot, man. You can learn how to get sponsored. You can learn how to submit a resume or something to PRPC. It's to see if they're willing to sponsor you guys in their race program or whatever you guys are doing as far as marketing. But it tells all about how you can get sponsored. There's deals on wheels. There's deals from everybody that we have on there. Zollinger Racing products. They have the code Dirt Life. Excuse me, The Dirt Life. And go to ZollingerRacingProducts.com. You can get a discount from Shock Therapy. Go to ShockTherapyUSA.com. The Dirt Life. Excuse me, is the code as well. Motul Oils, they've been a big partner of the show. KMC Wheels, EFX Tires, Evolution Power Sports just came on for 2022. Those guys are making some serious power. I don't know if you guys saw that video where they were doing the tuning on the new Pro R.
No.
Dude, he's got that thing roasting tires. So Todd and Jacob are having some fun over there in Phoenix doing that. Thank you to guys over at CryoHeat and SolderWeld. You can use the code DIRTLIFE at SolderWeld.com. Get yourself an off-road repair kit so you can save your ride. So, yeah, like I said, we're going to talk a whole bunch about safety today. I didn't read the comment that came by. Did you guys see that one?
Yeah, I couldn't see it.
It's going to be really cool. Any sales coming up? Does PRP have any sales coming up?
Nothing planned unless you get out to King of the Hammers.
Oh, King of the Hammers, where PRP is going to be? Are you guys going to have a little booth or tent or anything?
We're having a booth, and we always run a little love for driving out there to see us. So
right on. Yeah. Okay. So go out to King of the Hammers. Well, all of us will be out there. So and thank you guys, like I said, very much for joining us. So I want to dip into this thing right away and kind of start talking a little bit more about your program, Dave. So you help numerous racing organizations, testing organizations, off-road organizations. Maybe give us a little bit of a backstory on, you know, like your elevator pitch on how you got into the off-road community and then what you're doing now.
So it's kind of funny. I actually just got asked to work at Checkpoint back in 1996 for Best in the Desert's first Vegas to Reno. I'd never even heard of off-road racing. It was just a friend of a friend saying, hey, we need some help, you know, watching this road crossing. Went out there and got absolutely addicted to it. Couldn't believe what the vehicles were doing back then. Imagine what they're doing now.
Yeah.
And I went back to work. I was working for the local ambulance service. Went back to work the next week and was talking to a few people. I'm like, yeah, you know, we put EMTs out there all over for that race. And I'm like, oh, man, that's what I'd much rather get into. And so I started working with Best in the Desert at that point. Started helping out with Snore. Was helping out with Score with their US-based races.
Man, so you just went full in.
Oh yeah. It was every weekend. We were having a good time. And, you know, back in those days, we basically just sat in a checkpoint. We had, you know, little basic first aid kits, probably far less advanced than what John has now. And, you know, we were just out there to help where we could. You know, maybe we had a toe strap, maybe we didn't. And, you know, we were just kind of sitting in the pits waiting in case somebody needed us, and they'd come up and there'd be a little Red Cross flag. And that's where they pulled up and said, hey, you know, I'm hurt and need to be looked at. We didn't even have radios.
That's crazy, right?
Oh,
The old school days of off-road, right?
Yeah.
And so, completely changed. You know, as the years went on, we started wanting to travel more with actual race series and get to, you know, we got to know the racers, we got to know the series, we got to know the promoters.
Yeah.
And so I saw an opportunity back in 2008. To start our own group that focused on individual series.
Yeah, Motorsport Safety Solutions.
So we started Motorsport Safety Solutions. And there were about 10 of us there, you know, the first weekend for a Score race. And it's just completely grown. Now we've got almost 60 people that we're doing that come out to volunteer for our bigger races. You know, you talk about a Vegas to Reno.
Yep.
Not just do we have all the medics, but we're handling all the retrieval. So if somebody breaks down, they need a part run into them. We've got the guys, you know, helping out with that as well.
And so it's kind of like the way you started too, right? You have all kinds of people that come in. They volunteer their services. Some of them are trained, certified, all of these different
Correct.
Things, right?
Yeah, we've got everything from guys who work as tow truck drivers on the weekends to fabricators up through paramedics, nurses, and doctors. And so they each have their role that they jump in and they, you know, they they serve the racers and they love it. Everybody's 100% volunteer.
And one thing that I want to say right off the bat, and Aaron knows this very well too, is that you can never have enough volunteers.
Never.
Never have enough. So if you guys are interested, please, we have this question come up all the time. How can I get involved in motorsports? We always say, go, you know, lend your time for a team, be an intern on a team or whatever. Well, you can do it a different way, too. You can be part of David's team. If you're into the safety stuff, I know all kinds of people that are out at the motocross track. They want to get out to the off-road races, you know, like all of those things. So please reach out. And it's at Race Safely on Instagram as well. So you can always talk to Dave through there. Anytime, man. And you're also looking for help with some of the stuff that you're doing. If people have trucks or donations to make so that you can build trucks to help get vehicles off the track and people as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We're so busy. It started, you know, we were doing 5-6 races a year for Best in the Desert. Then we, you know, we were doing some of the score stuff. We were doing some of the all the different series, and we've picked up, we're doing sand drag races. We're doing testing with a couple of different manufacturers. So we're looking for help, always financial donations so that we can end up building new trucks,
right?
Or just acquiring new trucks.
Yeah. Or even if that's not necessarily a financial donation, right. Don't give them a beater, but you can give them a vehicle, right? Like give them something that runs or give them something that's going to help the program, because it doesn't just help you. It helps us.
Absolutely.
Because your focus is us. Like that's the reason I think it's so meaningful that you do what you do, is because it's selfless. It's for everybody else.
We're 100% out there for the racers, and most of our guys, they're using daily drivers to beat up and hope that they can you know, make it to work on Monday morning. So.
In the same car. That's a good thing, though. And I appreciate all the stuff that you do. And I know that you guys do as well. I mean, Justin Smith definitely. From Shock Therapy, what's going on, buddy?
What's up, guys? How's it going?
Hey, Justin.
Hey, good, Justin.
So, Justin, you know the guy sitting right to my left here, David?
we have met.
And then you're clearly new. You know Aaron from PRP as well, so...
Yes, absolutely.
Well, thank you very much for joining us on this this episode. We're going to call a safety episode, but we're also going to have some fun with it tonight. So this past Parker 250, I think it's pretty much well known in the whole off-road community that you guys, well, I saw a funny comment come in. We're milking this whole cow thing.
We need to move this right along.
Yeah. I want to talk about the back end of the incident. Clearly you guys had an accident. You guys hit a cow on course. It toasted the car. You guys, you know, you flipped over a bunch of times and you guys got out and you guys were safe, but there's a lot of things that happen afterwards post accident that a lot of people don't know about. So maybe you could get into it a little bit and, David can give his, understanding of how he reacts to situations like that.
Yeah, sure. So there's a couple of things that are automatic in the car. You know, you've got tracking systems in them depending on the race series, whether it's a Stella or Racing Tracks or whatever it might be. But that unit allows you to tell people in front of you, hey, I'm behind you, I want to pass. You can tell people that you know they're back there and acknowledge it. But it also sends an immediate warning to everybody if you're upside down or at least not on your tires. It'll let everyone that's coming by on the course know that there's a problem ahead, so they don't just come barreling through the dust into another accident and create more of one. So that's one thing that happens right away. And a lot of those signals, sometimes, for instance, like Estella and Score will send a signal to Score, and they will call you on that unit to make sure that you're okay or see if you need medical help.
Does that transaction come from you guys?
So Racing Tracks does the same thing. If you have a hard G out, if you are inverted, if you have a sudden stop, anything like that, it immediately within 30 seconds sends a text to our team and our radio relay and says, hey, you know, there's something going on at, you know, mile XXX, and this is what's going on, and this is the vehicle associated. And so we start working at that time to try to figure out, okay, you know, do they roll? You know, off-road motorsports being what it is it's absolutely insane. We all watch vehicles roll over, land on
the circumstances
wheels,
can
going.
Be different every
exactly.
time. Right?
So we start checking the data, seeing if they're moving again, seeing if they've been stopped for a long time, and then we'll start getting resources.
And you'll have your crew laid out so you know where everybody is, so the position B can get there quicker than position A or whatever it is.
Correct, absolutely.
Okay, that makes sense, Justin.
Yeah, and then in addition to that, of course, if, as long as you're still able to talk, then you can go, you know, right to either your team radio and let them know what happened, or you can go right to Best in Desert or Score Ops, and you can, or Weatherman, and let them know that you're okay or you need help, and that will definitely get to everybody else that's on course. And coordination outside of that, I mean, we're upside down. We don't know what's going on, but there's a lot after that to get people to us.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Now, have you ever had an incident on course when you were racing or with Maddie or your team that you've had to wonder how things were going on?
Well, definitely. I mean, we're constantly trying to communicate with them as best as we can. You know, never as dramatic as hitting a cow, but you know what was really impressive watching Justin's in-car footage was that was their first thought. I mean, it was amazing how quick they reacted to tell, you know, tell your pits you were okay. They could pass that word along that there's been an accident, and I was pretty impressed with the radio communications there. But I don't know if in a stressful situation like that, if I would have thought that clearly. So.
Yeah, that I actually messaged Justin the next day, and I was like, first of all, you guys were calm during the accident, yeah. And then after that, they were so structured. Even they were thinking to each other, "I'm not going to unbuckle until you get out."
Yeah.
Like, that was something that was phenomenal to me, that they kept their composure that well. And I think that probably has a lot to do with, well, first of all, his experience, but being prepared for a situation first, right? Like, everybody wants to go out to the races and win. But do you go out to the races prepared for safety to win? Like, that's how I think that people should approach it. And Justin's a prime example of that. And I don't want to milk the situation anymore, but like, but for real, it really is though. Like when you watch that video, just like you said, Aaron, and you probably have conversations, Dave, with all of the people about that same type of thing.
Oh, absolutely. It's, you have some racers who are just quick to just jump out of the car and they don't really pay attention to anything. We've had vehicles that are left running upside down. We've had, you know, recently at a legacy race, there was a guy who wanted out of the car real quick. And as he climbed out, the vehicle started to come down on top of him. And he ended up where just his brand new impact helmet was the only thing keeping the entire 6100 truck from coming down on his head.
Really? So yep. All that weight was on his helmet?
Correct. It broke the helmet in about six different spots, but he was okay.
Oh my gosh.
Because he just, you know, hey, we rolled. I need to get out of the car. We were already there. We were going to flip him back over. They would have continued their lap and been fine. But not everybody focuses on it. Sometimes you're not thinking clearly. Sometimes you don't have a plan.
Man, that's crazy. Well, we're going to talk to Aaron a little bit more about some of the stuff that happens in the pits, like that similar situation. But Justin, when that incident happens to you, you acted a little bit differently. You did inventory of the car, you did inventory of yourselves, and then you kind of managed the situation. It probably felt like slow-mo for you guys, but I don't know how it felt in the car when you're thinking all that stuff.
I probably shouldn't admit this, but the reason that we're decent at that process is because we've wrecked a couple times.
Practice makes perfect.
But you know, you're
really bad experience to share with you.
But you're not any different than 90% of the racers out there, right? I mean, like, everybody has that incidents.
Give it enough time and you're definitely going to have it happen to you. But you know, I've been inside of a roll cage since 98 in off-road, and I've had a few, and I've actually had more wrecks practicing or testing than ever in a race. And of those, you know, I've been knocked out. I've gotten knocked hard enough where I couldn't see for about 5 minutes after getting out of the car. And almost none of them had anything to do with fire. So a little piece of advice from somebody who's been upside down a lot. 95% of the time, there's never going to be fire to deal with as long as your vehicle is up to par safety-wise with the regs of the organization you're in. So I think that people feel like they have to rush to get out of the car because they might have that problem with fire. And if you do have fire, yeah, get out. But if you don't, then take a second, take a deep breath, make sure you're okay, make sure your navigator's okay. And then run down the checklist that maybe you can make in your mind before you race. Let your crew know. Make sure that the car is off the course. Are the other racers going to come and hit you? Are you better off staying inside the car than getting out of it? And we've been in a couple races where we just barely put the car on the door and had all the safety workers put us right back on our tires before we could even get a seatbelt on. So Absolutely. You got to out a little bit. And remember, it's not a rush to get out unless it's already on fire.
Yeah, that's 100% true. Like, I couldn't express that how many times I've told people to keep calm in situations like that. The minute you get under duress is the minute that something can happen. And being calm really, really helps in those situations. And again, we're going to talk about Aaron's incident in the pits as well, when he had an incident fueling and how he kept calm and how everything was. Go ahead, Justin.
You know, everybody gets a ton of time inside their race car on its tires. Not very many people get very much time inside the car upside down. So take a breath and take it in. It doesn't happen often.
Enjoy it.
Get your phone out, do an Instabanger.
Yeah. Right. Send it to all your friends. You know, they'll appreciate it.
Oh, man. I do appreciate that you tell everybody that, though, and especially coming from someone that's been in off-road racing for a long time. When you hear somebody that's mature enough to be able to handle a situation like that, I mean, first of all, we want to make sure that everybody sees it. That's why we're having a show today about it. But if somebody's a beginner racer, maybe it's a family and they're sending their kid out there, or, you know, maybe like when Aaron first started having Maddie drive, what are the recommendations that you usually give to those people to stay safe?
You know, it's not even just somebody who's beginning. There are guys who have been racing out there for 30 years who have never had to get out of a vehicle that's upside down. The safest place, unless you have that rare fire, and I would agree 100% with Justin, it's very rare that there is fire involved. Unless you have that fire, the safest place for you to be is strapped in that vehicle.
Yeah.
Go through everything else. You know,
upside down, not upside down, whatever it is.
Yeah, we're actually working with the guys over at Trophy Light. They're going to take one of their old chassis and build us a rollover simulator.
Really?
Yep. And we're going to take it over to races, and we're going to put it on display, and we're going to have people practice getting out of a vehicle when it's upside down or if it's on its side, because every different direction that you're sitting changes how you have to get out of the vehicle. You know, when you undo your belts, you're going to land on the guy sitting next to you. You know, all those different pieces of the puzzle that fall in. Are you going to release your belts? Are your belts even going to release as well when you're upside down? When they're under load, and I'm sure Justin can attain to this, when they're under load, sometimes they don't release as well as quickly.
Nope. They're a lot harder to pull when you're upside down.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're going to actually talk about some of those things, Justin. You'll actually like one of the product things that we're going to talk about today. But to continue on that subject, Dave, like, you have to be comfortable being uncomfortable to stay safe, right? Like, to be able to notice that. And I think racers are really adaptable, and enthusiasts even too, to be able to understand that they can do that and manage the situation properly.
Absolutely. Helping get the right information will help all of us. If you jump out of the car too quick, then we have no idea what's going on.
Right.
You know, we're going to start sending everybody there when you may have it back on its wheels within, you know, minutes.
Yeah. And I don't want to get too far into what happened with me, but like when I was in a situation where I had rolled my car over at the UTV World Championships, I felt like it was forever, but it was probably only 45 seconds or so before I got out of the car. But it was enough time for everybody to pass by, and then I walked to the side of the track and I was safe, right? And all of the things that happened in that time, it really felt like it was an eternity. So your comprehension of time and you have to really discipline yourself, like what Justin did in the vehicle. So I really think that that's a cool thing to be able to do, is to teach people that.
Yep. Get them a little bit of practice, get them experienced with it. You know, I'll tell you, there are trophy truck guys racing 35, 40 years that have told me they've never once had to get out of a vehicle.
Really?
Upside down or on its side.
Wow. That's pretty insane, Justin.
I think practice is huge. What you guys are doing with that chassis, I mean, that's massive to educate people. And hopefully everybody take you up on it and give it a chance to try and get out. It's not as easy as it looks. And it is a good idea to practice that. And like we already said, you know, practice your process in your mind before you go racing.
Yeah.
What's going to happen when you're upside down and how you're going to do it.
100%. And then, so post accident, you guys got out of the vehicle and you guys were assessing the situation. When did the crew get to Justin, or Justin, maybe when did the crew get to you?
You know, they would have been there in about 5 minutes, because there was a pit not too far behind us. But since we were fine and we didn't have to have anybody there right away, we told them don't rush it. And they were off doing other things with other people, and we took our time. It took us an hour to get the cow out of the course, so we had plenty to do.
Got a helicopter. Come on, hook it up.
Yeah.
We, debated. We all talked about strapping that counter out, but I figured we're going to get in trouble with somebody. Somewhere is going to have that on video.
I was going to say, could you imagine the social media after something like that? Yeah. Flying cow through the air.
But it wouldn't have gone good. I guarantee it. Even though we had good intentions.
But you guys did do a bunch of, and all funny things aside, but you guys did have a bunch of stuff that you still needed David's help for afterwards, right?
Yeah.
Or David and his team. Sorry.
Yep. The guys got to us, and let me tell you, they showed up in a Raptor. And they could care less about the bushes they were pinstriping that thing with, man. I was just like, yes, sir, I can knock the bush down. Oh, no, it's screwed anyway. They're just driving this right through everything. Whatever it took to get us pulled out of there. And we toe-strapped it. They toe-strapped us out about 4 miles between course and off course. And they were on the radio. We're inside the car with helmets on. So we were in communication about what the left's coming up and what we were going to do, trying to get it on the trailer. They were professionals 100%. And they're talking with our team, letting them know that they're pulling us back, where to meet us and have the trailer ready. And when we got the car up on the trailer, it was just a big thank you to everybody there. And wouldn't you know it, they are UTV guys.
Oh, so, there you go. Nice. Oh, yeah.
Up with a bunch of parts as soon as they're ready.
That's cool. One thing that I want to know about that whole situation is Justin makes it sound easy, right? There's a lot of logistics that go into that because you have to have people on course, you have to have trained individuals, you have to have radio communication, you have to know exactly what's the necessity in that situation. So where do you start, David, when you say, are you okay? Are the human beings okay? Do we need medical? How does the process go?
So that's the first thing we want to find out. If somebody is injured, then no holds, we're getting whatever we need to get there. We're going to get our medics there. We're going to get retrieval guys there. We'll get helicopters there if need be.
Right.
That's our absolute first priority anytime we're dealing with an incident. As soon as we verify they're okay, and usually we'll check back after a little bit of time and make sure, hey, you sure you're doing okay? All right, great. If we've got communications with the team and things like that. In Justin's case, that area out there was saturated with broken UTVs. I think I counted at one point there were 18 to 20
holy smokes
within about a 10-mile stretch that were broken and having issues. So it just became triage. It was, okay, let's go get this one, get that one back. There were a couple of them that had whole corners pulled off. So we have to use our little tow bars that we have that you have to lift them. And that's not something we want to be doing going down course while it's going.
Right.
So we waited until pretty much the last couple of cars had gone by when we knew it was safe. And that's when we made sure we got all the rest of the cars out there. My guys were out there until about 2 a.m. dragging cars off the course, making sure that
that's everybody
was home safe.
Mr. DHYY, yeah, unfortunately the YouTube stream is not working. Sorry, bud. So just stick to it on Instagram. Ask questions here. So Justin, the one thing that I was noticing about what David was saying is that all of this stuff happens behind the scenes. It's pretty phenomenal that the operation is running so, I don't know, you want to say efficiently. That's probably not the right word because there's so much commotion going on, right? But to be able to get to you guys and to handle that in such a short amount of time when there's 18, 20 other people out on the course that need help is phenomenal.
It is. It's a lot. And I don't think they get enough credit. I mean, they're kind of the unsung heroes of racing. None of this would happen without the crews supporting behind the scenes. And everybody's quick to judge. I think they need to slow down and think about the effort that's put into it. You know, if we had to get out of there fast, I'm sure we would have. We did not need to, and so we were perfectly fine hanging out. There's other people that had, you know, bigger issues and that needed to get off course. There's a lot that goes into it. I think if you ever see anyone that's a volunteer on the course, you need to walk up and thank them for what they're doing because it's just badass. They just love the industry and the sport so much that they're there for free to help us.
Yeah, 100%. Now, on that same note, when you guys roll up on Justin or you roll up on other people, can you gauge whether it's an unsafe situation at the time of getting there? Like, how does it, when you get there, how does it change from what you know when you're radioed in to get there, to arrive?
Well, the first thing we're going to do is get there and make sure that it's off the course, and not just off the course, but is there an area where somebody's going to be passing and coming into them? The racing tracks is great. It sends out the hazards. it's a piece of technology, so you can't always count on it. Sometimes right. somebody's going to pick that area to pass. They're going to see some bushes down and think, oh, this is a great area for me to jump off to the side and start going through there, not realizing there's a car broken down or rolled on the side there as well. So that's our first thing that we'll do. Sometimes we'll use our vehicles to block it until we make sure that it's clear. You know, all of my guys are running all kinds of flashy lights and
all kinds of cool stuff, disco lights.
They're willing to sacrifice their vehicle if need be to make sure that those people are safe.
Clearly, Justin saw it being sacrificed.
For sure.
So, Justin, I think Dave is doing a fantastic job, but I wanted to show you one of the products that Aaron actually brought up while we were getting set up for the show.
What do you got, Aaron?
They have a new mechanism. I think it's right back here, Aaron, on your right here.
Yeah, this is a little easier. So
you can put it in front of that camera right there.
All right. Well, I'll explain it a little bit. So, you were using the traditional latch and link hardware, which is what we've always run. And there was a...
And we're talking about the harness, the lap belt that goes along the harness.
The lap belt on your harness, yep. And so for a long time, people have been asking for a cam lock belt. It's real popular in on-road racing. It's never been extremely popular in off-road racing. You kind of show it there. It's never been extremely popular in off-road racing because dirt is the death of those things. Yeah. So
they were actually outlawed for quite a while.
They were. And I remember in the early days of Ultra 4, a guy got hurt really bad because he thought it was latched when it wasn't. It was just bound in with dirt. So what we're working on here is, and it's kind of hard to see, but basically we've taken the normal cam lock and we've built a rubber boot around it and then put rubber on the fitting that is sewn to the belt. So when you install it, it creates a tight seal right here, and that basically makes this thing sand and dirt tight. It's now sealed, unit. So as long as, if you're driving, obviously you're going to have it all buckled, it'll be sealed. As long as when somebody's not in your passenger seat, you seal it up, it's gonna fix the issue with cam locks. One nice thing about cam lock belts is when you are upside down and you flip them loose, all five spots come loose, where in a latch and link, the shoulders actually bind up on the male side of the lap belt will bind up and get stuck. And especially when you're heavy, like myself, you get 300 pounds leaning against that thing, it doesn't go anywhere. So a cam lock belt will fix that. And I think we've got a good solution here with the, with the dust cover to keep some of the dirt out, fix the cam lock issues. So.
That's a badass idea. All the other motorsports have proven that that's a really killer setup. And if you can keep the dust out like you already are, I think that's a home run.
Cool. Good to hear.
Yeah. I do too. I think it's cool that these new safety products are coming up. Now, if you had to give one piece of advice as far as a safety concern is, Justin, for what you just went through, what would it be? Oh, looks like we might have lost Justin with some of the internet's connection speed. Man, it's been doing so good.
Yeah, we were killing it.
Technology is agreeing with us. So we're just going to keep going here. But I guess maybe we'll fire the question to you. If you were to give advice back to Justin that he could give out to somebody seeing the incident that he had, what would it be?
I think he handled it almost perfectly. I don't think there's anything I can come up with that would be better. Going through that mental checklist when you come to a stop and reacting to it, making sure that everything's good, having good communication with whoever's in the car with you, having good communication with your pits. That is, in desert off-road racing, I think that is the most critical thing on any incident that you have.
Okay. What?
The feed left. The show said it ended?
Oh, it still says it. Well, we're not active now.
We're not live, yeah.
I can start it up again then. Dude, we got to call IT, man. What the heck, Aaron?
I don't know.
Part two. So I will tell you that this is only the second time that we've had this many issues with the internet.
Well, they're always here, aren't they?
No, one was at 4Wheel Parts, actually.
Okay.
But that took 6 months for them to figure out their IT issues. So hopefully we can beat that. Okay, so we are back. Hopefully this internet is stable enough to have the rest of the show here. But thank you guys for joining us on episode 114. We're having the safety show with Motorsports Safety Solutions and at PRP Seats. So thank you guys very much for joining us. Hopefully you guys can jump all back on here. So one of the things that we were just talking about on, we'll call it part one, is making sure that you're communicating properly so that you guys have the right understanding of what's going on at the situation. Adversely, I want to know what the best way for people to communicate to you or through your team or through their team to be able to get the information to you so you can be prepared when they arrive. So if I crash on course and I'm able to communicate, what do I say to give you guys the best opportunity when you get there?
We need to know if you're injured. Even if you say, okay, I'm not feeling well, or yeah, I might have injured my arm, something like that. Any of those things, we're going to treat as a medical until proven otherwise.
Okay.
So we want to know whether you're significantly injured, whether it's a minor injury, and then we want you to check back with us. We want to know while we're responding and update that, because that will be, now that your adrenaline's wore off, now that you're starting to get your senses about you, what's going on there? The next thing we want to know is, what do we need to get you either towed out of there, mm-hmm. repaired back in the race, or what we can do to support you and get you back to your team or get you the parts that you need in order to keep racing.
Right.
You know, and 90% of the time, these guys will, you know, we'll get them an A-arm, we'll get them a shock, we'll get them
that
tires,
is so cool.
And they're back on the
one thing
on
the that road. I have to say, though, is that you guys do a fantastic job of that, but you guys got to remember, as racers, they're not there for you. They're there to help protect you. But if something like that happens, that's a generosity thing that they're offering. That is something that they're doing above and extra for us as racers to be able to help support us. But if something happens right next to them, you're second. Like, that something else is more important. You got to respect that they do that as well, because I've seen a lot of racers get angry at that. Like, why couldn't we finish the race? Because, well, no, unfortunately, that's not how it works, right?
I've been yelled at by racers because it took me too long to deliver a transmission.
Yeah, see?
I'm bringing you a transmission in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
You're not going to get this in service anywhere else.
Yeah, yeah, that's a pretty nice level of service, right? Okay, so we'll... I appreciate the things that you guys do. Now, in a situation like what happened to me at the UTV World Championships, I was really badly injured, and you guys were able to divert the course and uh-huh. have everybody go around us. You guys were able to make the situation safe, and you actually had a helicopter had to land to tend to me. But what was the things that happened in the medium between that?
First thing was making it safe to get you out of there. We had to get the course diverted. Anybody who's raced Laughlin, you know, you've got those huge walls of dirt that you race around out yep. there in the leach field. And from where I was, probably 50 feet from where your car was, your car wasn't even viewable. It was down so deep in the trench there, you couldn't even see it.
Right.
So we had to divert them completely around you. Then it was safe to get a vehicle in there to move you, get you out, and then get you turned over to the ambulance and get you off to UMC.
And one of the things that I thought was so remarkable is, how long did all that situation take?
I think our first truck was there within seconds. They were sitting right in that general area when it happened. But I don't have the exact timeline, but I would say within 10 minutes tops, you were already to the ambulance
yeah.
and well on your way.
And that's
there.
What I remember. I think somebody had told me that it was like an 8-minute span or something, 8 to yeah. 10 minutes. And to me, when I was thinking about that, that's phenomenal. Clearly, you want to do it in this fast amount of time, no matter how, if they got a broken arm, whatever it is, right? But when somebody needs a really significant amount of attention, you just said how hard it is to get into the middle of the desert with a transmission, right? You're doing every single thing that you can to tend to a person in the middle of the desert, and to have a response time like that, it's almost like going from an ambulance to your house down the street, right? It takes longer to do that. So I thought in my head that it was phenomenal that you guys were able to accomplish that.
Well, it's no different than the racers. We have to know our courses. We have to, you know, we have guys that go out and they pre-run our courses so that we know our access points. We know how to get into the various areas.
We had a comment come in from Wise 141. What's up, Mitch? Mitch actually bought my old YXZ and got it in second place at the AZOP race this
nice.
Weekend. He said, how can people be a part of the rescue team? If so, how do you go about so we can help too?
Yeah, just send us a message through the Instagram. It's at Race Safely or our Motorsports Safety Solutions business page that we have on Facebook. Either way, those messages will get to me, and we'll be in touch and see if we can use you out there.
Yeah, that's cool. And yeah, like we said at the beginning of the show, more volunteers, the better, right? Yeah. We had a question come in from Keen Racing that's kind of along the lines of what we were just talking about, Aaron, with the products. So you guys offer harnesses from PRP, different race harnesses, 3 inches, 2 inches. But his question was a little bit more specific. He said, how often should our race seat harnesses be replaced or inspected? Should we replace after a rollover or a wreck?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, you should inspect them before every time you use them. If there is something's frayed, stitching coming undone, you definitely have to replace it. And SFI recommends a 2-year life. So we put expiration dates on our belts, race legal belts. And so you should definitely replace them every 2 years.
And
after a hard impact, I definitely recommend replacing them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And we always, when we would inspect them, we would actually only, not that the product doesn't last for 2 years, but we would replace them every 6 months just because of my personal thought process in the way that the race cars would go. Yep. I didn't think it was worth not spending the money. They're so cheap to be safe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you know, a lot of these things you don't think about until you've been through an accident or a tragic event, and then it becomes right in your forefront. You know, it's something that you think about all
but
the time.
But it's even little stuff, though. Like, we would wash the car with harsh chemicals. We would pressure wash it. All of these things are
deteriorating
your safety products, right? And so I would make sure that no matter what, because I didn't know that they could last 2 years. I didn't know what would happen. I didn't know how much they were stretching out. I'm not an expert, right? So I would say, you know what? I'm just going to err on the side of safety on the side of doing it earlier, right? Yep. And making that decision on my own. So it really helped me because, well, I felt cool because I had some new seatbelts every 6 months, right?
SFI has great, data available on how, you know, why they picked two years and you know, they've got all that data on their website. It's a great source of information.
Well, I think we can keep talking a little bit more about the products that that we do have for safety. And David can also, you know, chime in as well with our next guest, Blake Wilkie. What's up, dude? How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
We're doing awesome. Hey, so you probably know Dave and obviously you know Aaron.
What's up, Blake?
Yes, sir. How you boys doing?
We're doing good. Hey, thanks for taking the time from all the busy stuff that you got going on. Ooh, look at that. What is that, the trophy bug back there?
It's the trophy bug, dude. We're getting close on her.
Nice. She's looking good, man. Hey, so we're having a little bit of a conversation about safety and how good of a job these guys are doing out at the races to be able to take care of all of us guys that are just sending it, right? So we got into a little bit of a conversation about some of the products that not only PRP but other manufacturers offer that you put into your builds. And I wanted to kind of get your, feedback on some of the safety stuff that you include in the things that you build, whether it's a Class 11, the new trophy bug, and even some of the stuff that you guys do with Megalodon and all the other ones, like your UTV.
Yeah, I think that they make such a wide variety of products that cater to anything from the side-by-side guys that are racing or playing or the Jeep guys. And, I mean, aside from the style, the safety is huge. I mean, I've been upside down in my Razor a couple times. With the convenient clip together seatbelt style latches, and a lot of people have asked me, I don't know if I like those as well as the mechanical ones, and I mean, I just tell them, well, I've cartwheeled a lot of shit with them, and they work just fine.
Real life testing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, in Jaws, we're going to be running their composite structured seat versus the suspension seat, like in the Class 11, but the Class 11 with only having 5 3/4 of an inch of wheel travel, that little bit of suspension seat and how much it actually, the chatter bumps can kind of transfer through you because we're running such a small tire, that comfort and that extra little give there can, I think, saves my back tremendously after 300 miles at the minute 400, which we did in December. So, I mean, yeah, I've been a firm believer in their products for quite some time.
Yeah, it's cool to hear that, though, too. And I didn't even think about that, right? Like, it's hard for me to understand. Well, first of all, I think that Class 11 is the gnarliest class ever.
Yeah.
but just having that suspension seat, that makes total sense.
Yeah, it adds a little bit of more movement, you know, especially in those low travel vehicles.
Hey, Blake, will you turn your volume down a little bit?
Better?
Yeah, I think you're getting a little bit of reverb, but it's still happening a little bit. But,
dude, my phone is so clapped out. I think we experienced this last time, but not quite as bad.
Yeah, she's getting rugged, dude.
Dude, I mean, if I get a new one, it'll probably be in the same status real quick.
You don't work a lot right by your phone, so I don't see why it would be all busted. Okay, so... Yeah, and so when he's talking about that stuff, does any of that trigger something in your mind, David? Like, okay, well, he's making all the right calls to be as safe as he can on course.
Well, he's an 11 guy. He's crazy already. I mean, where do you go from there?
That's funny. So what kind of harnesses do you use? Because Aaron was just showing us a new product that they come out with, a different latching system.
In both the class 11 and in Jaws, we're going to be running the 6x3x2s, which essentially has a 2-inch shoulder harness here with a 2-inch pad, and then it steps up to a 3-inch lap belt, and also after the pad, it goes a 3-inch. The reason being here is so that this strap will fit into your Hans device.
Yep.
That goes on your neck to where it fits in that channel and really locks it in and holds it in there. Those are my personal preferences, and I like how on those straps you have to pull up to tighten because it's always easier, I feel like, yep, to pull up and get that thing super tight versus trying to pull down kind of into the seat just because we're in and out of these things so much. You know, and or with other people, I found that even this style in like UTVs and stuff might be a better bet for certain people if they're in and out a lot, if they want the mechanical style, you know, if they don't want something big and thick on their neck, depending on the seat of their choice.
Yeah, I even noticed that for like smaller girls, yeah, like those things work better too. Man, do we got to get you some ear pods, son?
What are those?
Well, Blake brings up a good point with the 2-inch because there's actually a big trend of it, of switching everybody to 2-inch. 2-inch shoulder, 2-inch laps for race and play. So, you know, NASCAR switched to all 2-inch about 7-8 years ago. And the off-road world's been a little bit behind. So at PRP here, we're going to make a big effort this year to come up with some new 2-inch race belts, you know, introduce some different stuff to our line and kind of do some education of the racers to understand that in 2-inch, you can get a 2-inch belt tighter. And if you think about it on a really big guy like me, as you're tightening it, it's a lot easier to get a piece of smaller webbing into all your little nooks and crannies than it is a large piece of webbing. So you can get a smaller belt tighter, get it down into your hips better. And so, you know, we are definitely making going to try to make the move.
Yeah, how do you feel about them like upgrading the safety stuff, Dave?
Oh, I love that. And I think he touched on one of the critical points in the head and neck restraints.
Yeah.
You see people who are running some of the thicker ones, and you'll see them as they pull up to the finish line, it's hanging off, and it's, you know, part of it is up and over the, you know, the shoulder tabs. And
you wouldn't think that that would make a difference, but it actually does. Like, you can move underneath that and slide around.
Yep.
The 2-inch really falls into that channel really nicely, and then that little lip on the edge, it's stuffed in between the neck portion and the outside of the device. So, if there's anyone that's thinking about racing or wants SFI belts, those are my personal go-to.
Not to be like, this is not a sales show, this is a safety show, but if people do want to get in contact with you, just go through the Instagram, or what's the best way to do it?
Just email sales@prpseats or Aaron@prpseats.com. You can talk to me about them, but he brought up a couple points. The pull-up belts are also not really common, and one of the reasons why is you have to adjust them to different size drivers. So from the point to where that adjuster is on your lap to where it's mounted is a fixed position. So a big guy, you're going to have that adjuster fall way on your side, and then that same adjustment, put a skinny guy in it, now that adjuster is way in the middle. And so they're not as common because they're not as universal. They take a little more work from the end user to tighten, you know, adjust where that's mounted to get it in the right spot, you know, and then you can snug up the last little difference by pulling up, but you really have to have them adjusted close for the right size driver that takes a little bit of work.
So yeah, I agree.
One of the reasons why they're not as common, but it's a great option because it's a heck of a lot easier to pull up than try to pull down, especially in a containment seat where you're just jamming against the side.
So Blake, you can probably get along with this a little bit. So I didn't know anything about safety when I got into UTV racing. I was just like, oh, I'm a big moto guy. You just sit down and you just steer the wheel, right? Like that's all you got to do. And then you can seatbelt yourself in there. But a couple years after I got into it, my buddy from Jeff Furrier and Tim Hawley from UPR.com, they had me bring my vehicle down. Made sure that I knew where to weld up the seat brackets, how to angle the seat harnesses, do all of the stuff at a pretty pristine level. I mean, like, it was making sure that everything was just on point. They even moved my seat over a little bit, was like half an inch. Yep, there you go. To be able to understand where to locate it in the vehicle so my feet weren't sideways on the pedals, so they were straight on with the pedals. Wow. And all of that made such a huge difference for me. It showed me that you don't get tired when you're comfortable in the car. You can last a lot longer. Yeah. You can be much safer. Like, there's tons of things. So what kind of stuff do you do when building your vehicles to be able to get those same types of things done?
Well, they have, you know, a ton of information that comes with the packaging, and we're literally finishing up welding our tubes here for our clip-ins. When you do run these clip-ins, you have to put a safety pin in the belt to get through tech or whatnot. That way it's a second mechanical lockout, I guess you can say, versus like bolting them in there. But I mean, you definitely want it to be comfortable. You don't want it to pull you way down in the seat, and you don't want them to be high to where if you do get rolled over, you have that slack that can essentially allow you to float in the seat. Your hips are supposed to hold you in. You know, your shoulders are just supposed to keep you from flying out or get too much momentum to where your neck can clack out and then you're home. So like for me personally, their seats fit me really, really well. So like I would say I'm like your average size 5'10", 175 pound dude. But they also make a ton of other options. So like you're not limited. So having those extra options for plus two, plus wide, plus two high and all that other stuff, really allows a lot of consumers to be safe. But it depends on the vehicle for which application I'm going to be using out of PRP stuff and safety things. But
yeah, you guys probably get that question all the time, Aaron, and then, like, you can probably understand this from when you see racers as well, David. Like, there's many different setups for everybody, but usually the same concepts run across the board as far as keeping that person situated in their seat.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the first question I ask of anybody that walks in is what vehicle you have and what are you trying to do? And that'll kind of guide you with, you know, what seat they need. And then from there, you got to find something that's comfortable. So, and Blake mentioned all the different options of height and width and all those things. That's going to be comfortable, but depending on what the guy's doing with the seat will really determine, you know, where to go as far as how much containment do you need. We want to make sure we get the seatbelt slots in the right location so they're not pulling you down or making you loose. And so,
yeah, exactly. Definitely plays. So there was a couple comments that came in. One of them was, Blake, can you please mention the style of seatbelt that you just recommended?
Yep. Just kind of commented back on there.
Oh, okay.
These are the 6.3x2 harness. Again, they have the 2-inch shoulders for the Hans and then 3-inch the rest of the way. And then obviously the crotch belts that will attach down low. That'll come up through your center section area where the berries are at. Those are going to be a little bit smaller, but that actually Ys out. So it's a 6-point harness because it has two different attaching points to where you can spread those out to keep you from going side to side a little bit more so, which is cool. And that's what we're going to be doing. We're going to probably be mounting one here and then one on this other side to where it comes up in the center and kind of acts as a Y to give you less side-to-side movement.
Yep, more stability.
Yeah, that's perfect. And then what do you guys think? I saw a comment come in that said, what do you guys think about the ratchet style
I saw that, harnesses? Yeah. So those that don't know, that we make a belt that has a ratcheting mechanism. You have to reach down outside your seat and ratchet yourself tight. It's almost like what's on the side of semi trucks where they're ratcheting down loads. Those belts are amazing. I mean, that's what Maddie runs in her race car. And, you know, I definitely recommend anybody that can do it. That the issue with those is space. You
yeah.
need room to actually reach down in there.
Yamaha, you can't fit it in.
Yeah. I mean, you almost have to design the car around those belts.
Right.
They take up so much room and they're such different from what's
even
out
there. Even RS1, you can't fit it in either. So,
It is definitely a tight fit. But if you can make it fit, it's a huge improvement. Because like Blake says, you got to have your lap tight. And that's the only way you can really get it really tight.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
These boys are building this old Chevrolet right here. Check out what's in those bad boys. Yes. Top runs PRPs.
Dude, you guys got a whole thing going on over there, man. We're stoked to see you guys getting all that stuff taken care of and getting so close to having that bad boy done.
Appreciate that.
You got any questions for Blake before we go?
No.
All right, man. Hey, thanks for joining us tonight, Blake. Get back to work, buddy.
Sneak peek. Oh!
Nice. Nice.
All right, man.
You caught it. I'll catch you boys later. Much love, and hopefully some people are going to learn something from this one.
Yeah, we hope so, dude. Hey, thanks for everything, dude. We really appreciate it.
Much love, boys.
See you, Blake.
It's so cool to see, like, it's literally coming firsthand. Like, he's building it right now, right? Like, so it couldn't have been more of a good fit. When we talk about like other stuff, I saw a comment come in that said a big boy seat. There's all kinds of different ways to be positioned in the car. What are your suggestions on when somebody's situated in the car? Do you have a seat that you're sucked into? Do you have a seat that's suspension, like he said? Like, what are the differences? Maybe explain it to us a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest difference in a suspension seat, all the different variations we have back here are containment. You know, how high do you want those sidewalls to come up? You're putting it in a vehicle that you're getting in and out of. It's got doors, operating doors. You don't want a high containment seat because you're going to cuss it every time you get in and out of it. So, you know, those are some of the factors. And so a big guy seat, there's two ways to do it. We either build it really wide and keep the containment, which we can do, or we build a lower sided seat and you end up with a little more sitting surface and a narrower seat, but you don't have as much side support. So there's two different ways to do it. And, I mean, we definitely do it and we kind of,
the big guys with a really strong back. That's the one where they choose.
Yeah, exactly.
but it sounds like you guys do have, different ways for different, people wanting to have the fit in their vehicle.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you've got the room in your vehicle, get the most containment you can get.
Well, I learned a lot when Jeff Furrier told me and set my cool car up, and we've had another episode with him as well that people can go check out if they want to get more safety stuff. But this, like, I learned something new every time. It's so cool that you guys are talking to us about this. I mean, a class 11 with a suspension seat, that's a freaking genius move, dude.
Yeah.
He's taking that 5 inches, moving it up to 8.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Way more. Increasing it by 30%. That's a big deal, right?
Oh, yeah.
Can you explain the 6-point like Blake was talking about?
Yeah. So basically it's the crotch belt is wide. So when it goes down through your crotch, it's connecting in two different spots under your legs. It keeps the lap belt from shifting basically. So it helps control your body in a radical crash where you're thrashing around.
They use that same kind of thing in skydiving and different aerial stuff as well too. Yeah. So and it probably feels better, like Blake said, on the berries. So
yeah.
All right, so we're gonna get back into a little bit more of the safety stuff before we let Aaron go and do his 75 hard. You guys had we were talking about fire and you guys said fire is usually not an issue. It's a very low percentage of when vehicles catch on fire, but there are certain times when vehicles do catch on fire more frequently. And usually, like I just saw, and a lot of our audience members saw at Texplex, a vehicle caught on fire about half a lap after it rolled out of the pits because of something wrong with the fuel system. And it didn't just catch on fire a little bit. It just got 30 gallons of fuel. Oof. And this is not, it's as expensive fuel that they were using. It's race gas, right? And so, unfortunately, that car melted. But is there certain things that you can do to prevent those things from happening to make it safer? Because we're going to get into what happened with Aaron a little bit. He's already coming up with ideas, but I want to hear it from you first, David.
I would say of the fires that we deal with, the majority of them are
directly related to fueling or just after fueling. It's fuel has been dumped. It's been dropped down on the motor. I don't know what happened in the Texas incident, but I'm guessing that they probably had some fuel that got down on the motor. And as soon as they took off, something sparked it. They ended up with flames. With that much fuel, you're definitely going to have issues. It's not uncommon for cars to burn down, but it does happen, I would say, probably, you know, a couple times a year in all the different series.
Right.
It's something that happens.
A car burning down is not as bad as a human having an fire issue.
100%. 100%. Right. You know, cars can be rebuilt. But in order to keep that safe, you have to make sure that you are not getting fuel. Some of the fuel delivery methods that are out there for fueling have been very creative over the years. I mean, go back to Score a few years ago. We had somebody who, you know, hooked a truck up while they're going down the freeway.
Moving. Yeah.
You know, dumping fuel.
Airplane style.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different things. Then there's, you know, people who have pressurized just 55-gallon drums and tried to push a lot of fuel.
Right.
You've got the fuel towers going. You've got pressure pros going. There's all kinds of different options. I mean, I think we've even got a few UTV teams that are trying to use pressure pros now just to move.
So there's always been like controversy in racing about all that stuff, right? But the main thing that I wanted to get across, and the reason I asked a generalized question like that, was because just keep it as safe as you possibly can. And this is what I'm leading into with what Aaron's incident was. Unfortunately, you had a fueling issue and a fire. Maybe you can explain it a little bit more and we can have Dave diagnose the situation.
Yeah. So we were Maddie was racing Vegas Torino. We were pit 9 in Gabs there in the middle of the friggin' nowhere. And she came in for fuel. And there was a couple factors here. It was not her car. She was in somebody else's car. We were using our fuel tanks. So, and it was just manually fueling, you know, with a 11-gallon tank. And so.
And when you say manual fueling, you still have a quick fuel nozzle and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, still have a redhead nozzle on.
What do they call it? A dry brake?
Dry brake.
Yep.
Still have a dry brake. So, but I'm holding the tank. I'm not using a fuel tower. I'm not using a pressurized system. And the way that you have the angle of that spout for her car was slightly different than this car. So I'm holding it at an awkward angle. Anyways, go to pull the dry brake out. It's supposed to automatically shut off. It didn't. Gas tank's really high. It has about 5 gallons left. Pull it out. It dumps fuel all over the side of the car. Hits the pit mat. Splashes up. I'm pretty sure hit the brakes, hot brakes probably. Maybe the turbo. I doubt it was a turbo. The car generated so much heat running that race. Who knows what it was. It immediately sparked. I had to run with the gas can to try to get it away from the car because I knew that there was just tons of fire or tons of gas on the pit mat. It's
You separate the more fuel and get it out of there. Like,
yeah, try to get the rest of the fuel away.
And this is a situation where I want to make sure that people understand that you're into rest because you're trying to solve a problem, but you're doing it like Justin did. You're taking all of these things and you're thinking about what you're doing to make sure that you solve the situation.
When you were saying it felt like you were, you know, out of the car for an hour and it was probably 45 seconds. It was the same thing.
And it
was amazing how time just slows down. You're focused on every little step that you make, even though I was fully engulfed in flames. I was still thinking, you know, I got to get the gas can away. I got to roll around on the ground and I need to run back and get my kid out of the car.
Right.
Well, getting the kid out of the car never happened because by the time I put myself rolling around on the ground and I had my pit guys were chasing me around with the fire extinguishers. It was like something out of Three Stooges there. But, luckily off-road community is freaking awesome. And a whole bunch of people showed up, put the fire out. Maddie and her co-driver, Jesse Gage, finally realized the car was on fire. And bailed out of the car. They got out safely. Incidents like that, they're somewhat of a blessing because we never thought of issues like that. When you hear about them and we've been racing for 5 or 6 years and you just think, it's not going to happen to me. I mean, I don't think our race team will, you know, ever be this safe. I mean, we would have never been this safe. You know, going forward now, we put so many different things in place. It just by having a, you know, a pre-team meeting where we discuss what could happen.
Right.
You know, staying on top of really little things that you just don't think about until something bad happens.
But that's exactly what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, right? Is you don't know about, like, well, what David said, there's people who've been driving for 30 years and they've still never been upside down their trophy truck, right? So to be prepared, even if you haven't done it, think about what could happen and be prepared for it. One of the things that you did was you diagnosed the situation after the fact, even though, you know, you did get a little bit hurt. You burnt your hands. Yep. But luckily that was the
really minor compared to what could have happened.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
And now you're taking that and you're actually making things safer. I think you do have... Well, maybe you can explain what a dry brake system is first and kind of show that how it works. It's just like a quick filler nozzle, right?
Yeah, quick fill nozzle. This pulls back... This sleeve right here pulls back when you insert it into the vehicle, and then fuel dumps. And I can dump 10 gallons in about 10 or 12 seconds. It dumps really fast. So what happens here is this spring is pushing this plastic piece. There is a spring underneath this plastic piece that is actually pushing up against this aluminum sleeve. So you've got a metal spring rolling on aluminum. It's bound to lock up, especially when you mix it with dirt. And I got a lot of slack online because, oh, you didn't maintain your dry brake. You're not staying on top of it. Okay, possibly. But, I'm not willing again to ever risk my life or my kid's life on this working 100% of the time.
Right. Even if it's brand new, you could even still potentially have an issue. So
you pull it out at a slight angle and the aluminum gals a little bit, it's going to happen again.
Right.
So what I've got here is a secondary shutoff, basically, and I'm still messing with it. It's pretty clunky, and I'm trying to get it right. But, basically, this is a
– Well, necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah, yeah. You catch yourself on fire, and all of a sudden, you think real clear. So, basically, as I'm fueling, I'm holding this thing open, and I've made this opposite of what a normal ball valve would do. That's the open position, so it's dumping fuel. I let go of it. Obviously, it needs to spring all the way back, or you can manually shut it off. Now, I pull this out. If this does happen to fail, I'm going to lose a cup of fuel, from here to there. Not gallons. And as I continue to modify this, I'll probably end up making this all one piece. There'll be even less that will come out. And then added little things that are just in a nicety. This is a vent. Everybody vents these things with a zip tie.
Right.
So put a little vent in it so you don't have to vent it with a zip tie. So anyways, this is basically the result of catching on fire and trying to figure out how the hell is this never, ever going to happen again.
Yeah.
And so that's one more solution
for me. I actually had lunch with you after that happened, and I remember you being really humble about the situation, and I was thinking to myself, wow, that's a pretty gnarly moment because you got hurt. But the only thing that you had on your mind was everybody else, right? Like you're trying to see how you can solve the solution or have a solution so that doesn't happen again to make it sure that everybody else has a way out.
Yeah, there has to be a way to eliminate fire from pits. I mean, I don't ever want to see anybody go through that again. It was more scary than actually getting hurt, which is a good way, I think, for an accident to happen because it makes you think, it makes you aware, and you still get to race another day.
100%. Josh from TactMed, what's up, man? Thank you for chiming in. When you see stuff like that, David, it's got to be pretty refreshing because you guys are putting in so much work to protect everybody. To see that other people are putting in the effort to protect everybody too is probably pretty good.
I love seeing that. And, one of the crazy things just listening to the story is burn to the hand.
Yeah.
You're wearing a fire suit.
Yep.
That is something that was changed just a couple years ago. I mean, if you go back 3 years ago, we didn't even require anybody wearing fire suits in the pits.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point to bring up. Had you not had a fire suit on or had you not been protected?
I mean, Vegas to Reno is a shorts and t-shirt kind of weekend.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, everybody's out there, wearing the bare minimum. And so it's great to see that some of the things that we've thought of and that we've tried to implement across all the series are coming to work. And you know, the dump cans, that's probably, there's more fires from dump cans because I think they're harder to control sometimes. Yep. You've got this big, heavy jug sitting up on your shoulder, so sometimes it gets really challenging.
They're massively heavy. John Hupper's actually commented in and said, are there fire extinguishers? Yes, there's usually anywhere from 2 to 5, 10 fire extinguishers all around there, and all of the teams are required by tech to have a minimum, but usually they have more.
Well, the neat thing, too, is, you know, when you're setting up your pit, if you're fueling, you're required to have a fire extinguisher. You're required to have somebody with the fire extinguisher. Yep. It's not just, we know where it's at in the truck. No, you got to have it out. It's got to be on the mat. It's got to be ready to go. So you have those people ready. I try to encourage everybody, hey, just because Maddie's coming into pit and you're in the pit next to him, if your car's not here, hey, why don't you grab your fire extinguishers? Be standing there ready to go.
Exactly.
That is the best thing about off-road community is everybody is helping everybody, no matter, you know, whether they're your competition or not. And so having that, those extra eyes, they're quick to go.
Foreman C said, after Vegas to Reno, there was talk about having better driver safety briefings before the races, excuse me, both for new people and experienced people. Do you think that that's something that will happen in 2022?
Absolutely. I've already been talking with Best in the Desert. Our newest retrieval guy that joined us in December, he hosted the rookie meetings for many years with Best in the Desert. His name's Kurt LeDuc.
Oh, wow.
He's actually out there retrieving for us now. You know, Kurt pulls up in his Jeep and pulling people out of the middle of the desert.
Talk about an expert.
Yeah. So, we've talked to him about getting back on board with the Best in the Desert and hosting those rookie meetings again. Great information that comes out. I know there's actually several drivers that have expressed a desire that they would like to do that. So that is definitely something that is working on. As you know, with everything this country's gone through the last couple of years, just trying to get meetings has been a little bit challenging.
Yeah.
So we're still working on all of the nuts and bolts on that.
I like how there is forward progress, though, and at least forward thinking. So it'll be cool to see that. I'm a huge proponent of safety, because I've gotten jacked up so many freaking times. But I think it's really, really important. And I think it's more important when I see, again, all of the other people out there. You know, I mean, I'm looking right now, and 20 feet away from us is a fire extinguisher here in the office at PRP. So like that means a lot to me that other people are thinking about the, people on course, people in the pits. You know, all of us drivers, we think, okay, well, if I have a fire extinguisher on board, I'm good. Well, no, that's not necessarily the case.
I don't know how you could get to it quick enough. I
mean, right.
It was crazy. I think that, during tech or even during the driver's meeting, we need a pit meeting. Honestly, would like to see that next year. Is somebody from the team besides the driver needs to sign off? They've been through some sort of 10-minute safety course. Yep. On. It's amazing how many guys on our team will all say, "Hey, I need you to stand right here with a fire extinguisher while I'm fueling," and they'll kind of comment, "Yeah, I've never used one of these before."
It's like,
holy
crap!
Yeah, that's
rather
right.
Ironic. At Parker, a couple years ago, I hosted a fire extinguisher training out in the Python area, and we had 7 people show up.
Wow.
Over 350 entries and 7 people showed up.
Yeah. We need to make it mandatory. Yeah. I think at least one guy from each team needs to sign off that they've been to it or understand just some basics.
And I understand people are limited on their time and their schedules and stuff.
It's all volunteers. Tough.
And maybe they can't get out there, or even the race teams, like you're too busy to go or whatever, but take it upon yourself. Like if you can't attend the fire extinguisher meeting out in the middle of the desert, wherever it is, like, or in the pits, take it upon yourself. Have your crew chief, have yourself, the drivers, just take 2 minutes before the race and say, look, this is what needs to be done. It's super easy, and you can have a really successful pit stop. And if something happens, you're ready.
Yep.
So, I think that's a fantastic thing to do, and just being prepared. And I didn't want this show to be like a preaching on it or anything like that, but it's pretty clear that all of us have been through enough to be able to be proponents of it. I've been on fire 3 times, very much like good amount of fire, like where we were completely on fire, but we just rolled around on the ground and got put out. But we had all of our safety gear on and all that stuff. The only other thing that I have had as an incident was I got burned by hot oil. And that came through portions of my outfit onto my skin.
Probably made it worse, just soaked in. And
and you're racing, so you don't want to stop, right? So it sucked. But the times that I was on fire, every single time I made sure that I took a deep breath and calm down to get out of the situation every time the car burned to the ground. But we didn't care at that point because it was such a bad fire. As long as you're away from it, you're good. So I think it's really important. And this stuff doesn't just happen on the race course. This happens in the sand dunes. This happens on trails. This happens everywhere. And you don't have Dave to go out there or his team to go out there and rescue you. So anybody that can do it, I mean, even if you're going to go out drinking beers with your buddies on the weekend, having a good time, we love that you guys go out in your side-by-sides and enjoy your off-road community and stuff like that. But before you get drunk, go have a conversation with your buddies. Say, you know what? We all have fire extinguishers, right? This is how you use them. Then go have fun with your buddies. Or, you know, talk to them. Say, hey, you know what? This guy's the beginner on the team. I've been out on this trail a million times. Watch out for these rocks. If you flip over, stay there and wait till somebody comes to you. You know, just little stuff like that can make a big difference in your whole weekend and getting people back to the car, the truck, wherever you guys started your ride from. It makes a huge difference, and everybody will be a lot better off on Monday when they get back to work.
Not a doubt.
So, all right, well, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Well, actually, we're not going to play any commercials because the live feed isn't running. But you guys on Instagram, hang tight for a little bit. We'll be about 2 or 3 minutes, and we'll come right back, and we'll talk with John from Desert Squadron.
Hello, I'm Justin, the founder of Shock Therapy. Shock Therapy has been around for 5 years, but we have personally been tuning suspension on off-road cars and race vehicles for over 25 years. We tune between 10 and 15 cars per day, every single day of the week. Our concentration is tuning shock systems and supplying components that improve the ride quality of your car in many ways. Not only do we work on the average UTV, but we also tune suspension for race teams and professional drivers. We currently tune for over 87 race teams in Best in Desert and Score. Our clients and race teams rely on our suspension components to allow them to win races and keep them safe. Suspension is a moving target. We are always trying to hit that target with every customer that we work with. Each customer's needs can be different, and we tune our kits accordingly. Our research and development never stops. We improve our components every single day. As the industry evolves and improves, so do our parts and kits. As of right now, we have over 100 products for UTVs. So when you bring your car to us, you have the satisfaction of knowing that you have the most experience, the highest quality products, and the fact that your car is being tuned specifically to you.
Zollinger Racing builds the best aftermarket products available, products for your UTV or snowmobile, including billet radius rods, billet tie rods, billet steering knuckles, billet steering racks, alternator kits, and much more. All manufactured in the United States in-house at their headquarters in Nibley, Utah. Travis Zollinger and his team test in some of the most brutal conditions, racing in places like the Best in the Desert Mint 400, Ultra 4 King of the Hammers, UTV World Championships, and many more. Visit ZollingerRacingProducts.com and use the code DIRTLIFE to get 10% off your next purchase, and join us on social media at Zollinger Racing Products to see our products in action. Zollinger Racing, the best products, period.
Finally, we got Lance from Soderweld in the studio. Thanks for coming down, bud. Hey, why don't we just record a commercial now?
Yeah, why not? So good to be here, man. It's been a lot. I'm trying to get down here forever, and I wanted to talk about the off-road kit.
Dude, I love those things. I got it in my pack.
Yeah, we're running hundreds of vehicles now running them, whether it's a UTV or some guy's got it in a backpack and was motocross. He's got everything he needs to make a fix right there on the fly, out on the trail, or in the desert, whatever it is.
Well, since I've already used one, I kind of know what to use it for, but explain what it does.
All right, so let's pull one out real quick. You've got your aluminum rods. Remember, they're rods, right? So, you know, light torch, small torch. You can throw it in there or throw it on the rig with your flux. It decontaminates and cleans. Like, let's say a radiator, you get a random rock chip runs through as you're racing. You get a rock chip and a radiator. You got to fix it right there or you're out of the race.
You can patch it up.
It's all good to go.
Yep, just like welding.
Yeah, also as well with that, you've got a brake line fix. So with your flux, you can fix a brake line, stainless steel, and then your hot block, heat absorption putty. So it keeps you from getting burned, number one, as well as keeps the heat from traveling. So it's really, really nice.
I've used this not even to fix anything. So that stuff works so good, man.
Listen, it's easy. It's it straps in nicely so that you have everything you need in one little place, and you don't have to carry a big bag in
it's
the
It's like a first
truck.
Aid kit for your vehicle.
Yeah, Chase trucks have it as well so that, you know, if they need to make a fix on the fly, they can get it done and get it done quick and get you back in the race.
Dude, those things are so cool. All right, so it's at SolderWeld on Instagram, Facebook, and SolderWeld.com.
Awesome.
All right, thanks, bud.
Appreciate it.
We are back. Unfortunately, no commercial break, but thank you guys for chiming in and hanging out with us. It looks like we've still got a few people watching, but now we still got David from Race Safely, Motorsports Safety Solutions, and now we got longtime buddy John Lewis from Desert Squadron in. So what's up, dude?
So, guys.
What is that right there?
So, for my fellow Taco...
Taco connoisseur t-shirt?
Taco connoisseur t-shirt.
Dude, look at that thing.
When I told you I made my trip to Utah, we stopped at the one and only Beaver Taco.
That's hilarious, dude.
So,
the Beaver Taco? That's what
I'm
it's called?
Lie, yeah, I was kind of scared. My wife, when we were pulling up, we were looking at it.
Is Beaver Taco like a...
So Beaver is the name of the town in Utah.
A contradiction of words?
Yes. And it was the perfect place because it's one of those,
dude.
It looks so sketchy from the outside, but when you walk in and you hear nothing but broken English.
Oh, you know, that's the best taco.
Oh,
it was legit, especially for being in the middle of nowhere.
Dude, that's
in Utah.
Badass. Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
see,
buddy.
We have some pretty good friends on the show too, man. Yeah, Caden, I think that's pretty awesome too. Okay. So, give us a little bit of an introduction to, how you got into off-road, John, and, what you're doing now, and we can show people some of the, products that you have.
So, I kind of fell into off-road as a kid. I've got family members that used to work once upon a time for Rob Mack, Danny Thompson, Nelson, all those guys. Mm-hmm. I started venturing into the two-wheeled world, was a mechanic for Supercross Motocross for about 10 years.
Big moto guy.
Okay, Rock. then some of the people that I had met through moto actually started getting into the four-wheel world.
A lot of people. With age comes a cage, right?
You know, or you get smarter or something, maybe.
Yeah, whatever it is. But
whatever it is.
There's a lot of enjoyment in off-road, so whatever the way they get there, it doesn't matter.
No, absolutely. But through that, I made my way into the right seat of a truck. We had just a small little rollover. Nothing major. Nobody was hurt, but it was big enough where it took out our antenna, and we were literally in the middle of nowhere. Pulled out my cell phone. Of course, there's no cell service. So even though I know that David and his crew are out there, when you can't get a hold of them, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was just kind of an eye-opener for me. I had just recently become a father. So it was kind of one of those where, what would we have done had somebody actually been hurt? So I kind of went home, started doing some research, talked to my brother and all of his firefighter people, talked to a couple other friends who are paramedics, nurses, things like that, to try and build my own trauma kit just so that I could be safe. Turns out a bunch of people threw out the pits and everything started seeing what I was doing and took interest and started asking questions and asking me to build them for them as well.
Yep.
I was one of them. And it just kind of snowballed into Desert Squadron.
Yeah.
So
Desert Squadron makes different types of kits, but these are first aid kits or medical kits, as you call them. Honestly, I think David would be a huge proponent of these things. I think he's very, very happy that people would carry these on board.
So, and actually, working with Caden Danbury this year, and given
Hi,
his
Kate.
Age, what's up, buddy? I wanted to make sure that he understood how to use everything inside of it, right? So, and it's one of those deals where, look, is there special training for some of this stuff? Absolutely. But if you have the basics and the understanding of how to use it, you can still go a long way and you can still help yourself or somebody else. So
yeah.
Before Caden hit the track at Parker, I wanted to make sure he knew how to use it. I worked closely with a firefighter team who unfortunately was unable to make that race, who was going to provide him that training. So I called David. I said, hey, look, I have this situation. Can I send him your way? And sure enough, he was more than willing, so that way Caden can make sure he knew how to use it. Because that's kind of the key. Sure, anybody can buy it, but if you don't know how to utilize the products inside, you may or may not do any good.
Right.
So, and that's kind of where I keep trying to constantly evolve things and work with other people, trying to build a network of instructors. Right now, I've kind of have enough people throughout the Southwest region, through California, Nevada, Arizona, where I can refer you out to
getting proper training. Yep. I think it's super cool that you're offering this, and I think that it's big time needed in the off-road community for not just the products, but the education as well. And I strongly recommend that anybody that comes out to a race, whether you're a beginner or a professional, go say hi to David when you're in tech and contingency. They're usually hanging out. They're usually there. You can ask him any questions that you have. He'll even tell you, you know, their game plan, what he has set up for the event, because he's going out there. He's scoping it out. He's been on these courses many, many times. He knows where he's going to position people. He has that information already available. And if he doesn't, he'll get it to you. And it's really cool to see that, because you can tell your team, you can say, you know what? Here's our course map. This is where we're going to have all the pits, and just get a little tiny red marker and put a cross where you think that most of the guys are going to be. So that if you have an issue, you know that there's going to be potentially a rescue crew somewhere near you. And they can provide all that information. He can be a wealth of knowledge for you and your team. And it makes your guys' whole weekend that much more fulfilling, because you're safer and you're prepared.
Absolutely. You know, we want everybody to be as best prepared as possible.
Right. Like, the best day for you would be to not have to go get anybody, right?
We want to be professional spectators. That's our whole goal.
Yep.
Just watch some great racing all weekend long. Doesn't always happen. And, you know, that's why I'm excited when I see things like, you know, John and I have had numerous conversations over the last couple of years as he was developing the kits, because, you know, that's something where off-road has been way behind. If you look 3 years ago, I'd say, or maybe even 2 years ago, the list for what was required in a first aid kit in a race vehicle probably goes back almost 30 years.
Was it napkin and some duct tape?
Oh, it's
basically
ammonia inhalants and six Band-Aids, and, you know, make sure you've got a safety pin and things that, yeah, they're great to have, but they're not going to make a difference.
Yeah.
I have said for many years that when it comes to off-road, when there is a medical emergency, there are very few things that you are going to make the difference as a bystander out
And this isn't just racing. This is enthusiast stuff as
this
well.
This is anybody who's out in Glamis, anybody who's out just off-roading on their own.
100%. And I carry one of these on my enthusiast car as well. So did you have any input on helping John put the stuff inside the package as well?
He actually sent me the list of what he had, and it was a very well thought out, and it solves the number one thing that you're going to deal with as a bystander, and that's bleeding.
Yeah.
Stopping bleeding will save a life. Years ago, you go back a few years ago.
Let's point it. Get it up towards the camera there.
You weren't allowed to tourniquet. Everybody told you, don't tourniquet. Tourniquets now are one of the biggest things out there. They're saving lives on a daily basis. Stopping bleeding will save lives, and that's something that any bystander out in the middle of nowhere, at a race, walking through a casino, where you can make a difference.
And these things are small too. So this is just a little bit. I got decent sized hands, but this is just a little bit bigger than my hand. And it's about a square package. I mean, it's small, so you can fit this in your carry. You can even if you're on a race team, you can even mount it below the co-driver's feet or something like that. So you have those tools. Everybody is really concerned about having tools on, you know, even an impact wrench on their right. car so they can change wheels fast. But this is more important.
Oh yeah.
So I think it's great that you have that stuff. You also have another Chase Crew thing as well. So this would have been really important in the case of Aaron Wedeking's incident, being unfortunately injured in the pits, right? And so they can keep these on the chase truck. Do these have more stuff inside them?
So these ones do have more. And because knowing the nature of how chase crews work, I know that the majority of these guys are all volunteers. So not everybody is going to have, again, the proper training on how to utilize things. So with this kit, what I did is the majority of your trauma cases or your burn instances or things like that, this one is all broken down into modules. And they actually all have a usage instruction on them.
Let's flip it around.
So pretty much anybody.
There you go, Dave. Perfect. So look at you, man. Great co-host over here. Like Vanna White. Oh, right. Will most of the guys know who Vanna White is on Wheel of Fortune?
Ooh. So
I'll hold this for
not
you.
Not only that's your basic, your cuts and scrapes and your boo-boos, but we do have anything from eye care to major trauma to minor burns, severe burns. Unfortunately and fortunately, kind of the case with Aaron adapting his, and we even do sunscreen because I've worked on chase crews and you're sitting out there for hours and waiting for your truck to come through. And you get a sunburn pretty bad and it doesn't feel good. But so a lot of this stuff, again, it came out of necessity. So the burn treatments, this was something that in the original kits that I started doing, I just had burn creams, not thinking of a fueling fire or in a case I had a good friend, they were out camping, kid tripped and fell and his hands landed in the ash of the fire pit. So, you know, not only are these practical for race situations, it's literally an everyday situation.
I don't have one of the big kits, but I would love to have that in my garage, you know what I mean? Because you never know when you're going to need it. But you can always have it on your vehicle or in your motorhome at the dunes, wherever it is, to be able to help people. And because you never know, like, I mean, how many times have we seen Buttery Films and all his crew jumping over the fire pit on their 110s, right?
No, like, no doubt. And like I said, it's one of those things where, unfortunately, on my end, it was an afterthought. Because of people I know getting injured.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, everybody turned out to be okay. Everybody has now learned from it. So everybody's progressing from it.
Yeah, exactly. So John Hupper's actually said, learn CPR as well. I don't know if a lot of people, how do I say this without sounding like a jerk, have the time for that, but it's not that time consuming, right?
No, it's not. Basic CPR techniques can be taught in a matter of minutes. And this is another area where we're going to be trying to adding some classes out at Tech and Contingency, free for the racers, free for the chasers, free for bystanders coming by, hanging out at Tech. Everything from stop the bleed, compressions only CPR. We're looking at some basic fire extinguisher training and some basic first aid things. And those are things that we can do in minutes out at Tech. We can, you know, do it as a crew walking by and say, okay, at 12:15, we're going to be doing a class for 15 minutes. Come by and just learn some basic things.
Yeah.
And exactly. Try to get more people educated out there because that is it's a huge difference.
Hey, and if you guys do think that you're too busy to go by and check it out and you're doing your Instagram stuff at Tech and Contingency, well, you know what? Do Instagram stuff at that. Do Instagram stuff showing them teaching CPR. And then you'll show that your sponsors are concerned about you and your safety. And they'll actually get a little bit more views on your Instagram, too. So make sure that you guys do show that stuff, too, and share it with other people. Because this stuff is really important. And it's only important when you need it. And nobody ever wants to need it, but that's why Dave's there.
Well, you know, interestingly, back in 2016 at Blue Water Challenge, We had a gentleman that collapsed at the finish line. He was waiting for his kid to come in.
Really?
Was standing there along people, and he went into cardiac arrest at the finish line.
No way.
Bystanders immediately started CPR within seconds. Casey Folks was on the radio screaming, "I need a medic, I need a medic." Our guys got there within 1 minute with an AED, and they got him back. He's here today. He's racing, races the score series all the time. And then when he's not racing, he comes out and helps us in retrieval.
That is so cool.
You know, it's, CPR does make a difference. And all of our trucks are carrying AEDs to make sure that we've got that next step in it, because CPR gets you so far, and then you got to give them a good shock.
Yeah.
And hopefully get them back. But, you know, go back 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you wouldn't have, if somebody was in CPR, they're gone. There's
yeah, none of that existed. Do. Well,
it's awesome.
Dude, thank you for doing all that stuff and making sure that everybody is safe. What are some of the plans that you guys have for this year? Because every time I go out to the race, you're already there, man.
Oh, yeah. I'm leaving tomorrow for Parker. Start getting situated for the Parker 425. And, you know, we've got tech and contingency going on Thursday out there. And then races Friday, races Saturday. And it's just, it's a constant schedule. And then, you know, shortly thereafter, we'll be headed, we're actually going to take a little run out to King of Hammers and drop off some equipment to them.
Nice.
We loan equipment to them so that they have some good stuff out there for their racers. And then we'll move over for a legacy race. And it's just, it's one after another. I think every other week we're doing races.
Yeah. And that's actually what we're just talking about right now. I think it's Gillis is his name, but we are talking about people getting more training for first aid kits and stuff like that. And I think the main thing that I want people to understand is that no matter who it is, you can ask anybody that's walking down the tech and contingency lane or even at the dunes, ask the guy in the motorhome across from you. But these guys are experts, both John and David. They both know what they're, well, John's an expert on the product, but they both know the answers to your questions. And if they don't know it, they can recommend somebody that knows it. So it's always good to just ask a question. Don't ever be scared to ask those questions. I know that there's a lot of racers, they get out there, they get intimidated, they're seeing all these fast guys and, you know, great trophy trucks and all this stuff, but that's secondary, man. Go ask these guys, go talk to them, and go see, you know, what they have to tell you. They'll give you tips and tricks, man, and they'll make your race a whole lot better because your mindset will be a lot safer and more secure when you're out on course.
Well, and one thing that I always try and talk about, I see a lot of people in forums and on these Facebook groups or whatever, you know, I just bought this car, what's the first thing that I need to get? And the majority of the people want to sit here and talk about, oh, you need this suspension, you need these
wheels
go fast cars, you need these wheels and tires. Cool. One thing that the general public, I think, fails to remember is how capable these cars are out of the box.
Yeah.
And that I want to say probably 90% of the people cannot handle even the out-of-the-box car.
The amount of new racers that we see smoked at the sand dunes in their first 10 minutes
right.
is just off the chain.
And it's, you know, so sure, it's a very capable car, and it will handle quite a bit of things, but the reality of the stock cage versus what even the stock car is capable of doing, more often than not, that cage is not adequate
right.
for the situation. So you have to think, and it's not just the go fast and the look good and the how can I make everybody want to follow me on Instagram or whatever the case is. Like, so many people put safety as a secondary. It blows me away.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're going to spend, let's just say, $2,500 on wheels and tires, go spend another $50 on a kit or $100
right.
on a kit, whatever it is.
Well, and that's one thing, too. Like, I've lost so many people when I tell them the price of a kit. And it's like, okay, but how much is your hospital visit going to be? How much did you just invest in that vehicle?
Yeah.
You know, these guys got no problem dropping $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 on building one of these cars, but they don't want to spend $150 to take care of themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Or potentially one of their friends or something like that. So it's, and more often than
not. And even if you don't want to buy a Desert Squadron, go buy one at Walmart. And
right.
Yeah.
Buy something.
$5, whatever it is. Yeah.
There's plenty of options out there. I'm not saying mine's the best. There's plenty that are comparable or possibly better. I don't know. But if you don't have anything, what chance do you have?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, Dave has been talking about that this whole time, is like, just be more prepared for any situation that can happen.
Absolutely.
Because a lot of the guys at the Dunes don't have any recourse. You know, they don't have David looking out for them or any of his team members. And that's something that I want to talk a little bit more about, is the structure of your organization. Like we talked about at the beginning of the show, it's all volunteers. Mm-hmm. People like, even like John, lending you a hand, you know, you guys exchanging knowledge back and forth. But these people are volunteering their time, and they're providing a service to you to save lives. And first of all, that's very meaningful, but there's a lot that goes into the organization. So anybody that wants to help, please reach out to him. But there's also ways that people can help just by donating too.
Oh, 100%, whether it be products that help our teams out, or whether it be, it's not always about money, that's for sure.
Right.
It's making sure that our guys have suspension for their vehicles. It's tow straps. It's, you know, Chuck Foreman over at Pro Eagle, he makes sure that all my guys have jacks. And it's amazing, because
Chuck's an awesome dude.
When you're out in the middle of nowhere and, you know, you rip an A-arm off or something like that, those Pro Eagles are about the only thing that are going to get you up in the air enough to do it. And so every one of our trucks, we make sure they've got those on board. You know, we make sure everybody's got the tow straps. We make sure all those different things have to come into play for a team. We can't just say, oh, yeah, you know, John wants to go out there and do this. All right, John, have fun. It's about $2,000 in equipment that even just a simple retrieval truck has. And when you start talking our medical trucks,
If I wanted to go out and be a part of your team and just take the truck that I have in the driveway, it's four-wheel drive, it's capable, it has an open bed, what do I need to put in there to be able to go help? I need some medical equipment.
Well, the first thing I'm going to do with somebody like you is I'm going to talk to you and find out what kind of off-road experience you have.
Got it.
Is this somebody I really want to put out on an active race course?
Makes sense.
You know, sometimes you get people who just, well, you know, I want a good place to watch. I've had a couple people come and they turn their radio off and they just go sit out in the middle of nowhere and watch the racing. Well, you're no good to me. You're no good to anybody else. I want people I can rely on. I want people that are good thinkers. I want people that have...
We all do, because if we're in the issue...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I want people that are worried about their safety, that they're worried about the racer's safety, because that's got to be the focal point.
Yeah. Do they care?
Whether you're a medic or whether you're our doctor, whether you're... You know, just some
you still
guy
have to care.
Towing. Yeah,
you still have to care.
And then if you're just a tow guy, I want you to be able to recognize, and I want to get you some basic first aid training so that when you pull up on George standing there and you think you're just there to tow the guy, but he doesn't know, you know, what day of the week he is and thinks he's racing in Maui.
Right.
You know, that's probably somebody who we need to, you know, we need to worry about.
Yeah.
So we go through a long process of talking to them, then we send them out with somebody else. You know, basically they'll either ride with them or they'll shadow with them with a car.
The intern.
Exactly. Right. Get them a little bit of experience, you know, before we just throw them out to the wolves and say, go have fun, enjoy the race.
And then once they're qualified to be able to do that and you vet the person, what does the vehicle need to be like for them to be able to satisfy those duties?
Always four-wheel drive. We're not real picky on, you know, what kind of suspension or any of that stuff you have. I can take a stock vehicle, and if you know how to drive it, you can do just fine.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't need anything. It needs to be reliable. It needs to be something that we're not going to be towing. You know, my first line in my first textbook when I took as an EMT back in 92 was, dead heroes are forgotten, injured heroes are a nuisance.
Yeah.
And so I tout that to my guys, no matter what role they have, all the time, because if you go out there and you get stuck, you're just creating a bigger problem for racers as well as us.
Yeah, 100%. So you need to make sure that you're capable and your vehicle's capable too. Well, you guys do a fantastic job, and we're all lucky to have you out there. I mean, I couldn't tell you how many times I've thought to myself, like just being in the dunes at the bottom of Comp Hill or Oldsmobile or something, going, I wish Dave was right here. You know what I mean? Like, because you just see an accident waiting to happen, you know? And it's like that security mechanism that you provide to all the racers is very, very good. And it makes us feel a lot more comfortable when we're behind the wheel or behind the passenger seat when we're out there. And even in the pits, you know? knowing that our drivers are taken care of and ourselves are taken care of in the pits too. So it's very, very meaningful that you guys do this. So anybody that's watching the show or listening to the show at a later date, please reach out to him. If you have any suggestions, or you can donate, or you can monetarily help them, anything that you guys can do, sponsoring them, you know, whatever you guys can do makes it so much better for the whole racing industry, and keeps these things going and keeps everybody safe. It's really, really cool that they're out there doing it. And man, everything started as volunteering, right?
So 100%.
It just keeps going and going.
You know, we try not to turn down anybody. We're doing several different racing series. We're doing motorcycle series. We're doing sand drag racing series. I mean, it's all kinds of stuff that we're out there for. And then obviously for Best in the Desert, for Legacy, and for Mad Media, we're out there as well.
Yeah, it's super cool. I saw you guys out at the Mint 400. That was absolutely pretty fun too, right? And like I said, you guys can reach out to David and his team at any time. Maybe we could just give the listeners a little bit of an understanding of how we can be safer inside a race car, or how we can be safer in the pits as a team.
Communication will always be number one, making sure that you believe it's safe. Especially if you're with another person and you're in the vehicle, you're getting ready to get out, four eyes are far better than two. Make sure you're looking around, make sure you know what's going on before you make any quick decisions. Obviously, if you're on fire, you got to get out, because that's going to take the priority there.
Yep.
If you're not, take the time, look around. Is it safe to get out? Is it safe to get off the course? Is it safe to get well away from the vehicle? You know, one of the things that, if you don't turn off the batteries, you got your lights going behind you, somebody coming up behind you, oh, well, I'm just going to follow this car.
Yeah.
And they'll run right into you.
Yep.
There are numerous instances of racers who get hurt worse as they're crawling out than they ever did in the crash.
Yeah, this guy right here. Yeah. So I can totally agree with that statement. How has technology benefited all of these situations? You know, like your iPhone, it has an emergency contact thing on it. Sometimes you don't have cell phone service, but your iPhone also has all your medical information on it. So an EMT or you or part of your team can go up and you can read that information properly. So if a racing organization or a standard procedure is with enthusiasts is always to have your iPhone in the glove box, like, do those kinds of things ever help? Like, what do those kinds of things help with your...
I don't deal with that as much on my side, because I've got instant access to driver registration, where I've got emergency contacts and everybody's listed in their registration
process. You got a central spot. Uh-huh. Got it.
Yep. So we've got that. When you were in a high speed rollover, if you had that phone in your pocket or, you know, something like that, it's not going to be where you go to look for it.
Right.
A lot of times the screen's going to be cracked or anything else anyway.
Got it.
For somebody who's out just doing it every day on the weekend, absolutely, those are huge things. They're what somebody's going to use to let your family know what's going on. You know, the days used to be that, oh, carry your blood type and things like that.
Right.
That's not that big of a deal anymore. That's every hospital's required to do it before they give you anything.
Right.
And they get it done in seconds.
Got it.
So, you know, that's not a huge deal when you're dealing in the United States. In Mexico, it may still be a priority.
Got it.
They don't have quite the technology that we have here.
Yeah, so a little bit more information down there is a little bit better. I think what I'm getting from this is, no matter what you do, even if you have the backup like what you have and the information at hand, if a driver in a vehicle like myself wants to take every safety precaution possible, it's not a bad thing.
Not at all. Not at all. We'll take everything, every gimmick, every gadget that they've got that is out there to make you safe. By all means, put them in.
Yeah, it's... I can't say how much I really appreciate with all the stuff that you guys are doing. And, you know, John, with all of the stuff that he's helping with enthusiasts and stuff, you can always check out, I think it's Desert_Squadron on Instagram, and go check out the products that he has. In Mexico, you tape your passport to your body. Well, there you go.
That's one way.
It is one way of doing it. But yeah, I mean, all of those little things, like, that's such a simple thing, right? To tape your passport to your body, but that could be life or death.
Oh, absolutely.
At some point, you know what I mean? And especially in a place like Mexico, where it's a little bit more remote. But yeah, like we're saying, you guys can get any of these products and go check them out, because they will help at some point. At some point, you will use them. And I can promise you, whether it's in the dunes, on the trails, wherever you're at, I mean, you could even be in the backyard and your UTV could be parked in the garage and you could use it if somebody has an incident when you guys are all partying 4th of July or whatever it is, right? Like,
it's happened.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's never a bad thing to have these laying around and, you know, take them on rides and things like that. But as far as the racing stuff goes, having David and having your organization has always been phenomenal for me to understand that I have that backbone to lean on, right? And it's always a really good thing for all of the other racers to be able to know as well. But the more help that you can get, the better.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So if you guys do have anything that you guys can do to help, please reach out and let those guys know. You know, approach them at the races if you guys have an idea for them, and hang out with them, talk to them about some of the stuff that you've been through. I guarantee he's seen situations worse. maybe you could tell us that. Like, you don't have to name any names, but what are some of the situations that you've come across over the years that were, you know, still on the forefront of your mind?
I have several over the years, but there's one that I use to talk to new guys who are coming in, because it's one of those you just never know what to expect. And in all the years of doing this, 26 years now, I've only seen somebody ejected from a race vehicle one time.
Wow.
And
that statement like baffles my mind.
Yeah. And so this guy was in a race vehicle and they rolled the vehicle and there were two people in it. Mm-hmm. The driver ended up with a broken back and he wasn't able to get out of the vehicle. His passenger ended up ejected out the window of the vehicle. And as the vehicle was rolling, his belts came undone and his window net came undone.
Jesus.
And he ended up laying out in the middle of the track. And so here's a driver. Imagine yourself as a driver and your co-driver's laying 30 feet away, but your back's broken, so you can't walk. And
right.
You're just sitting there looking at him laying there.
Helpless.
Yeah. I mean, there are just some very unique things. I guess if you can call it fortunate, they were running in the last couple vehicles of the day, so it wasn't like they were in
yeah, they didn't traffic. Have a pack of angry wolves behind them.
So I mean, if you look at anything fortunate, both of them have since fully recovered, so that's
thank
awesome
God, yeah.
I'm really happy about that. But it's just, there are freak things that happen. We try to plan for them, but you can't plan for everything. Every time we think we've got it figured out, racers seem to find a creative way to realize we don't.
That's actually a good topic to bring up, too, is that there's so many, I don't want to say racing is bigger now, but there's so many more people racing than there was a few years ago. There's tons of new UTV guys, and not that the new UTV guys are bad, good, indifferent, whatever it is, but everybody that's beginning and starting this off-road racing thing has a lot to learn.
Oh, without a doubt.
I still have tons to learn, and I would consider myself, you know, an intermediate or a veteran, and I've learned a ton today. And so when you see stuff like that, you see the off-road racing industry grow, you're just like, yes, this is so awesome. But then you're probably like, well, you know what? We need more education. We need more training. We need more safety.
They don't call them growing pains for nothing.
Yeah. Very good point.
And with that, George, though, so you see a lot of things that happen in the pits where you have a lot of new teams. You have a lot of new drivers. A lot of people have a tendency to want to sit back and potentially see what's going wrong and just kind of make fun of them. Being the experienced person, you should help the sport, help your fellow competitor or possibly your friend, because when you're doing off-road, you never know who you're going to need help from.
100%. I couldn't agree more. And even like when we did it on an enthusiast level, myself and my crew chief, we would go out to the dunes. We would get in a camp of 40, 60 people. We would walk to every single campsite as people arrived in the morning and help them adjust their harnesses so that they could be safer for the rest of the weekend. And right. Made sure that we told them, hey, you know what? If you don't have a radio, make sure that you use hand signals.
Yep.
If you do have a radio, make sure that you communicate whenever you need something, you know, and know that this is the way that people are going. If you see a flag and you're unsure about it, just stop. You know what I mean? All of these little tiny safety things go a long way in enthusiasts and racing.
Right. And it's too, you to kind of go along with that, you have a lot of these people out, say, new to the dunes or whatever, and you have your experienced camp group that's over here. And again, they're just, oh, look at what these idiots are doing, this and that. But instead of going over and trying to help them and correct them to keep everybody safe,
they get a video of it.
Right. So they'll just take the video of it and then they'll post it up. Oh, well, look what we saw this jackass doing.
Instead of helping.
Yeah. So I think we can help ourselves a little bit better, too, by offering up. that's solutions.
That's a fantastic point to bring up. Yeah. You don't got to call them out. Go over and help.
Right.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I found myself doing is, you know, everybody posts their videos on Monday morning after a race. And as I'm scrolling through social media, I'll watch a crew come in for a pit stop. And if I see something that wasn't quite right, or, you know, there was a, they're missing their fuel containment. They were missing a right. fuel apron, things like that. Yep. You know, I'll get a hold of that team. Hey, you know, I was just looking at your video. I think it's awesome that you guys put it up. You did this, this, and this. Great. You know, but remember this, remember that, remember this. And yeah. and just educating, again, educating.
I'm just here to help, right? Yep. Yeah. I think that is fantastic. And that, so I guess that's one of the questions that I just asked is, what has technology helped with? And that's clearly an explanation right there, that technology has helped with that. I mean, not just having your medical card on your phone, but showing these things and being able to be a proponent of what is good. And man, I am such a fan of the things that you guys are doing. It's pretty amazing. So you said that you got a bunch more races coming up. You work with a lot of these organizations. Is there anything that you can do to tell some of the people that may not be racers yet? They may be the Robbie Gordon of their campsite at the dunes or whatever it is. Is there anything that you can tell them or suggest to them as they're thinking about getting into racing?
Thinking about getting racing. Don't do it.
You're going to spend way too much money.
You're going to go broke.
You're going to go broke.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's... off-road racing, the entire culture from the racers to the pit crews to the families involved is such a special thing and so near and dear to all of us.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a huge part of our life. They're our secondary family. And I would never discourage anybody from doing that. It's an amazing thing. But don't step in thinking you are Robbie Gordon.
Right.
Don't think you are going to go win your first Mint 400 when you go out.
Yep.
Spend time getting to know the race, getting to know the course, getting to know your vehicle, getting to know, there's nothing more frustrating when we pull up and try to help somebody and you know, we ask a question, they have no idea anything about their vehicle.
Yeah, they just
don't
got
know
there.
If they've got a battery shut off. They don't know, right. You know, how to work anything other than they were thrown in the vehicles.
I've seen some guys on the arrive and drive programs that didn't even know it was a belt on the UTV.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like, it's one of those things. They had somebody seatbelt them in and they just went for it. And I think that's a very bad thing to do. At least just get a little bit of education, ask a few questions, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So, yeah. And Adam Grunder just said, when he gets out of a race, he feels totally responsible for everybody that's around him and his pit crew, his family, everybody. I think a lot of drivers feel that way. And that's why I was just saying, Adam, is that I feel so good knowing that David has our backbone, or, you know, I have a safety kit on the vehicle or whatever it is. To make sure that we're all safe out there on course. All right, so what was one of the best situations that you've seen? Because we talked about the guy getting ejected. What was one of the best situations that you've seen, other than Justin Smith last week, that you've seen with people being responsible for a post-race incident or a post-incident?
Well, we've had several, you know, when you talk about fires, it's very rare in a pit situation where any of my guys will have anything to do with a fire, because everybody is so on top of fires nowadays. Yeah. Everybody's got their extinguishers ready to go. There's people willing to jump in a hurry, that we don't have vehicles burning to the ground in a pit anymore.
Right.
That used to happen. I mean, you go back, I'm going to say probably 10 years ago, Jason Voss lost a vehicle in a pit.
That's insane.
You know, it caught fire. Those things don't happen nearly as much because of the safety involved, the awareness of people, and everybody paying attention.
Yeah,
and
so good on people for awesome. Learning. Yeah,
absolutely.
Right. So, yeah, and I guess that's what we should bring up that too, is as much as we're proponents of safety and we keep talking about you escalating your knowledge and stuff, it sounds like people are already doing that quite a bit. So if you already are, keep it going, man, and keep absolutely. Doing it and share that knowledge with everybody else too. All right. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about with the audience before we do our rapid fire Q&A?
Oh, rapid fire. Uh-oh.
Yeah. Rapid fire is fun, though, dude. At least we're not doing are you smarter than a third grader questions.
Oh, no.
Did you have anything else, John, or no?
I just personally wanted to kind of give a quick shout out to Dave and his crew.
Yeah.
The driver that I happen to do chase work for, Travis Williams, got in a pretty bad accident during qualifying in Pahrump a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And not only was Dave's crew there to make sure that they got the course or the truck off the course, they made sure that Travis and Pete were okay. And it wasn't just a deal where they came up and it was, hey, are you guys feeling good? The guy said, yeah, we're good. They didn't just leave. They had the presence of mind to know that the type of rollover that had happened, the type of incident that it was, once adrenaline wears off, things change.
Right.
And especially in this case, if you've seen the pictures of the truck, you'll understand that it was clear that it was a major impact and there was likely some scrambled eggs going on there.
Yeah,
so
it was
a little
violent
more than before.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit more than normal. But so, not only did Rocky just mash her own truck out there, cause they're all volunteers. They're in their own equipment. But like I said, her and Leah had the presence of mind to stick around and truly make sure that Travis and Pete were okay. Turns out, like I said, scrambled eggs. So both of them, even though the guys were telling them, hey, I'm okay, they knew better.
Yep.
They put their foot down and said, no, you need to go to the hospital and let's get you checked out.
Yeah. And that's the way to do it, man. No matter what.
Absolutely.
I really think that's awesome that you guys do that. And then, so to go above and beyond what John is saying, how many people do you usually have, like, well, let's just say a Mint 400, because that race just happened and it's going to happen again. You usually have a pretty significant crew.
So a Mint 400, just because you can never determine how many people are going to show up to race that race.
Right.
We had just under 50 people. I think we ended up with 46.
Wow, that is so cool. So, yeah, thank you to everybody that volunteered and helped out with that.
We had 14 medical teams and then a bunch of retrieval teams out all around the course.
That is so cool. I mean, that's got to be a warm feeling in your heart to know that all those people are willing to come help out.
They just absolutely love it. The race itself, it's a great race. It's got a lot of historic value.
Yeah.
And the guys just really have a good time.
And this happens at all the races. I'm just using the Mint as an example, but it's
Mint
cool.
Mint is definitely one of the biggest. Then you've got the Vegas to Reno, mm-hmm. where, you know, just the sheer magnitude of covering 500 plus miles, anywhere from 13 to 15 pits, plus all the retrieval trucks. It's challenging. Plus, we always have a couple of rivers.
How many miles are you logging over a year, man? Because you got to get to the races like everybody else. You got to drive the whole time you're at the races, and you got to get back.
Right.
I can tell you that truck out there, the racers came together and built the first Rescue 1 truck in 2017.
It's a F-250, I think it is?
It's a 350.
Okay.
And it is 171,000 miles on that truck.
Holy smokes, dude.
And I have a daily driver. That isn't what I drive on a normal daily basis.
That's crazy for me to think about, because that means that you've helped so many people in that amount of miles. Like, the human interaction portion of it is what really baffles my mind.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, that is so cool. That is so cool to know. Nick Castro says he was a volunteer for the Mint 400 and four-wheel desert showdown. So that's cool, man.
That was the legacy race they just had.
Yeah, right on. Yep. Well, good on you, Nick Castro. I appreciate it, man. So like I said, we've already said it a couple times on the show, but I want to reiterate it. They're always looking for volunteers. They're always looking for donations. They don't have to be monetary, but they can be. They can use parts. They can use sponsors. They can use anything to help out the safety crew that will benefit all of the racing organization and all of us racers as a whole. It's really cool to be able to know that these guys have our back, so we can have their back too. So if you guys do have any way that you can help out, please reach out to them at Race Safely on Instagram. And thanks, dude, for Desert Squadron for doing all this stuff too. I appreciate it, John.
Absolutely.
All right, David. You and John want to do this rapid fire?
Sure. We doing them same question both or alternating?
Yeah. How about we do this? Same question both, and you go first, John goes second.
All right.
Hard or soft shell tacos?
Hard.
Both of you guys?
Yep.
What about when you're down in Mexico? They don't offer hard shell tacos down there.
I'm ashamed to admit it. I have never done a Mexico race.
Really?
I've had three teams hit me up this year because I had mentioned that on a social media post.
Yeah.
That I'd never been there. And they're like, well, then clear your schedule. You're coming to Mexico with us this year.
Yeah, I was going to say, we could probably get that arranged with you.
Apparently somebody knows somebody. I don't know.
Well, if you guys aren't Or if you don't end up going, let me know because we can get somebody else to take you. Chicken or asada?
Asada.
Yeah. You don't know?
Yeah, we'll go asada.
You're not going to depend on where they're coming from.
I thought he was gonna. I thought he was gonna say beaver tacos. All right, dunes or the river?
You know, I just got exposed to dunes for the first time last year and absolutely love it.
It's pretty insane,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
How about you, John?
I'm just a flat desert guy.
Just all about the desert?
Yeah.
What if somebody drags you out to the dunes? Are you just bailing out? You're not going to stay?
I mean, I guess I should at least try it once.
All right. Three-wheeler or quad?
Quad. The three-wheeler guys are nuts.
Yeah, they are. That one dude, I think he did it at the Mint 400 on three-wheeler, didn't
he?
We
just had one do it at Parker this last week.
God, those guys are crazy.
I think there are actually two of them that did it.
Are you going three-wheeler?
Vegas or Reno, yeah.
Vegas Arena, holy smokes, dude!
Three-wheelers or three of them, I think.
What are you picking, John?
Dude, I'm not going on a death machine.
No,
I'm already dumb enough.
Me neither, man. All right, so this one actually was for Daniel Schenkelberg last time we had the show, but I think this is actually a good one to ask you guys. Would you prefer a video or a picture on Instagram? Because for me, I'm always a big video guy. Like that's what we're always posting. But I noticed that I like pictures more. Like, if it's a good picture and it captures the essence of racing, I'm just, like, all over liking that thing. Like, I can like it, like, six times, but it only does it once, right?
It all depends, man. But watching that silt fly up the side
of the head, those are good, too.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Those are good, too. Or, like, some dude just sending in a trophy truck in a slow-mo where you can see the whole vehicle working.
Right.
It's getting to do what it was designed for.
So, what are you going to pick, a photo or a video?
I don't know. I'm kind of in between because it depends on what it's of.
Yeah, that's true.
Because, like, in back to Travis's crash, we originally had all these still photos that were sent to us, and we were like, God, somebody has to have this on video.
Yeah.
And then once we saw the video, we're like, damn, dude, I don't want to watch that again. Can we just go back to the pictures?
So now that I've seen both, you got the one shot where the door is just kind of hovering out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, that to me is one of the most incredible stills of all time. But then when I saw
you
the video this morning, it was insane to see how hard it whipped and how quick it whipped.
Do those guys want that stuff to stay off social media?
They posted it all over.
It's all on Travis Williams.
I'll have to check it out then because I haven't seen it. Pizza rolls or jalapeno poppers?
Poppers.
Pizza rolls.
I'm going poppers all day. Me and Dave will party without you, dude. I think you'd get down on jalapeno poppers sometimes. Coffee or tea?
Neither. I hate dirty water.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm going tea, but where are you at?
It depends on the time of day.
Dude.
I've got to drink both.
John's like this. He's got all these little things, like little idiosyncrasies to make him choose. Favorite movie?
There's so many good ones.
There is so many good ones.
I'm still stuck on Dust to Glory. I thought that was one of the best.
Dude, lately,
my
new favorite is Don't Look Up. Have you guys seen that one yet?
I haven't seen it yet.
Well, Leonardo DiCaprio, you guys got to watch
it. I've heard of it.
Yeah, it just makes you feel like our society is so stupid. Like, it's just really bad. But it's a good show to watch. Have you seen the movie Idiocracy?
Yes.
It's like that, but new age, like a little bit more.
I'll definitely have to check that one out.
If you could have one superpower, what would it be?
Fly. I can get to people much quicker.
Oh, there we go. Look at you, man. Just get out there and just bomb right down on them.
Yeah, I'm down for flying.
You're down for flying too? You just bring kits right behind Dave.
Right?
Yeah. All right, let's see here. Netflix or YouTube?
Netflix.
I got to go YouTube because that's where all the good race content's at.
Yeah, there is a lot of good race content on YouTube. What are you watching on Netflix? Like that F1, did you see that Driven or whatever? Drive?
Oh, absolutely. That was a great movie.
That one was sweet. Oh, here we go. This one would actually be really cool for both of you guys. Most memorable race. And, I mean, this could be something that you guys raced in. This could be something that you guys participated in, something that you maybe remember saving somebody. My most memorable race with you is when you saved my life. So
you don't know why that stands out. You know, I think it was Laughlin 2 years ago when we had the absolute downpour of all downpours.
Oh, God.
And there was like 3 feet of water. That corner that you got stuck in, there was like 3 feet of water.
Just a mud pit or like
just
actual
straight water.
Like a pond?
Yeah.
Is that the one that Nate buried his 10 car in?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And he's like crawling out through the windshield to hook up.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point I was up to my knees in mud. I mean,
really?
Yeah. It was absolutely one of the most memorable races of all time.
It was really bad.
Holy smokes. What about your most memorable race, John?
I've got a couple, but I think the one that stands out most is probably going to be, it was back when I was a mechanic. And I got to do X Games in 2013.
Oh, right on.
Over at Staples Center.
Yeah. X Games makes you feel like a freaking rock star, man. I remember when I did that in 2008, I think it was. They made it. They treated us so good, man. I've never had a racing organization give you that much VIP treatment.
Yes.
It's so cool, man.
Yeah.
Ooh, here's a good one, especially since you guys take so much time in your cars. Favorite snack? Favorite road snack?
Lifesavers. I have them right in a bin right behind the seat.
Perfect.
The cheddar and bacon potato wedges.
Ooh, those are good, man. Supercross or motocross? Are you big dirt bike guy or no?
You know, we do a lot of desert motorcycle work, and then I worked at a motocross track in Sandy Valley for quite a while.
Oh, cool. So you know your way around two wheels too then?
Yep, absolutely.
Well, then what do you pick, supercross or motocross?
You know, I'll stick to motocross.
Yeah, just the gnarliness of motocross. Yeah. How about you, John?
I like the show of supercross.
Yeah.
But I got to stick to the origins of moto.
I kind of feel the same way. That's usually what my answer is, too. Let's see here. Oh, what other form of racing would you like to try? This is a pretty standard one that I always preface by saying, and then Maddie can actually talk about this, too, is that you can pick monster trucks, you can pick speedboats, you can pick whatever you want. It doesn't have to be F1 like everybody always wishes.
I absolutely love NHRA drag racing. I would love to experience that, just that feel of getting sucked back in the seat at 300 miles an hour.
That would be insane. That would be totally insane. I don't even know if, like, us as, I guess we're going to call us normal people, because can we actually, you know how they take people up in the fighter jets?
They have two-seater dragsters that they do runs.
How many people pass out, though? Because I feel like my body might not be able to withstand that type of G-force.
I'm willing to take that gamble.
Right, yeah. That's a good point, yeah. For the one time that you can actually get out there and do it. What about you? What do you think you would try?
It's a coin toss between either sprint racing or air racing.
Really? That air racing would be super cool. And I saw those sprint cars the other day at the, I don't know what it was called, World Finals or something out at Paris Auto Speedway.
Yeah.
That was insane. It was way more impressive than I had initiated.
Well, especially in person. But a lot of racing is better in person.
Yeah, it was so cool, man. Oh, here we go. Here's a good one for you guys. Who's your celebrity crush?
Jennifer Aniston.
All day?
All day.
How about you, John?
So the sad part is I know these questions, and I've been trying to...
Avoid it?
No, honestly, I've been trying to figure it out.
Oh, really? Like, do you have two then? Is that what it is? Is that what the problem is?
Yes and no, all at the same time. I mean, I love my wife.
That's your celebrity crush?
My celebrity crush.
Caden Danbury says, keep me on the ground. He's not trying to do any of the air racing.
Come on, buddy. Let's go fly.
All right. The final question of the night. Chips and guacamole or french fries and ketchup?
Chips and guac.
Unpopular opinion. I don't do guacamole.
You don't?
No.
Oh, man. What about if you had to do, like, chips and salsa?
Oh, chips and salsa all day.
Chips and salsa over french fries and ketchup?
Yeah.
Oh, winner, winner. Chips and salsa dinner. Well, thank you very much for all of the beaver memorabilia. I appreciate it. I'm going to have to go next time I'm cruising through Utah, which, in fact, I think I will do this year. I'm going to have to stop at this place. So thank you very much, John, for the T-shirt. Good. I really appreciate it. Were the tacos good?
Legit.
Surprisingly good?
I was, like I said, I was hesitant, but I had to go for it. And, yeah, they were... You'll enjoy it.
So I wanted to end the note knowing that David travels everywhere, or end the show knowing that David travels everywhere. And I'm a big fan of taking back roads wherever I can go and going to all the local mom and pop shops. And you have one in Bishop that's a bakery.
Yeah, I wouldn't really call it a mom and pop. It is, you know, single guy owned, but now his whole family's branched out and they've got places in Utah and other areas of California. But yeah, we had to make a stop at Schott's Bakery as I came down here today. That place, if you've never stopped there, I couldn't even get a sandwich today. It was 40 deep with people waiting in line for the sandwiches.
So,
today,
so you know it's good then, right? So it's worth going there. Yeah. Well, we really appreciate you guys not just coming on the show, just being the people that you are, giving back to the off-road industry. The things that you guys do, it's humbling and fulfilling at the same time, I think, for all you guys. So We all really appreciate it, not just from me, from everybody in the industry. So thank you to the guys at PRP for letting us come hang out. Thanks, Aaron Wedeking, for coming on the show and talking with us about the things that happened with him as well, and some of the new products that PRP has, as well as his little invention for his dry brake, too.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Thank you very much to John from Desert Squadron for bringing up his stuff. If you want to go check out the kits, you can at desert_squadron on Instagram. We've had them linked in some of the posts that we did. Please check out PRP. Keep up on all their products. And, of course, thank you very much to David. Race Safely is their Instagram. And please, please, every time you go to the races, come up and thank these guys for all the things that they do. You'll see David sitting around, but he's always got a bunch of crew that deserves just as much thanks as him.
100%. So without them, I'm not even there.
Yeah, exactly. We owe all you guys for being a part of the show. So please always go to the website, dirtlifeshow.com. You can participate in all of the deals and sponsor deals that we have there, all the knowledge that we're going to be sharing. We have some pretty cool stuff that's going to be coming up pretty soon. We're going to have a sponsorship summit where you can come up to. It's probably going to be at like Las Vegas Motor Speedway or something like that. You can come up and you can join us. You can also join us via the virtual thing. It's going to talk about all kinds of things about how to market yourself better in off-road racing and do things like that to be able to further your race program so you can get out to the races and hang out with all these guys. Thank you very much to everyone that sponsors the show. Guys over at KMC Wheels, EFX Tires, Motul, Shock Therapy, thank you for Justin for joining us today. Did I say EFX Tires? Evolution Power Sports, Zollinger Racing Products, Cryo Heat, and Solder Weld. And thanks to Blake Wilkie for calling in. That was pretty cool. Like I said, thank you very much to PRP for having us join at their retail location showroom. Next week we have Dakar 2022 recap with Seth Quintero and Austin Jones. It's going to be an awesome, awesome show. We can't wait to see how all that stuff is. Could you imagine doing safety for a Dakar?
No, it's something I've watched at in awe. I mean, when they start shipping, you know, 20 helicopters over there just to follow racers, it's just absolutely insane to watch. It's truly amazing.
It really is. I wonder what their safety procedures are. I know that all the racers look out for themselves. I know that.
Yeah, you know, they've got so many air resources that are flying around on stuff. I don't know how long it takes for responses or how remote it is. It's too hard to determine when you just get to see little bits and pieces of it.
Exactly.
Makes it back here.
But it's cool, man, to see all that stuff. So we're going to have a Dakar recap next week. So thank you to all you guys for joining us. Really appreciate it. Like I said, you guys are our lifeblood, so please keep communicating, slide into our DMs, hang out with us as much as possible. And like we said at the beginning of the show, please share this with all your buddies so we can grow the show, too. Thank you guys very much for living your dirt life with us. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Dirt Life Show.